surprising development in the field of climate change. Check in with our US correspondent for the latest from there. But first, asylum seekers are banned from the hotel in which they were housed in a win for the gathered mass of performative patriots screaming at them outside. That and more with me, Nick Abbott, after the new news at 10 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Israeli military says it's taken the first steps of its planned operation to occupy Gaza City. It follows a clash with Hamas south of Khan Yunis in the Strip. Many allies have condemned the action, but Nogatana Polsky, a journalist in Jerusalem, told LBC News that will have little impact on the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
Israel has been very clear, in this case through the words of Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich. He has basically all but said that this is a finger in the eye of Israel's allied countries, all nations that said they would recognize a Palestinian state. He said to them, this plan will bury a Palestinian state. You won't have anything left to recognize.
A man's been jailed for 9 years for shooting a police officer with a crossbow after stabbing his neighbour. 55-year-old Jason King was eventually shot in the stomach by police after refusing to put down the weapon in High Wycombe last year. Nick Hind was senior investigating officer on the case.
This is the type of call that you dread, really. Member of the public that's been stabbed, police officer that's been shot, and then the suspect also being shot by police.
An MSP has been charged in connection with possession of indecent images and suspended from Scottish Labour. Colin Smith was first elected to Holyrood in 2016 and is now listed as an independent. Some train fares in England may increase by 5.8% next year following a rise in the RPI rate of inflation. It rose to 4.8% last month. The government's not yet confirmed how it will determine the cap on regulated fare rises next year. But Transport spokesperson for the Lib Dems, Paul Cooler, has told LBC it is likely we'll see a jump.
It's quite ridiculous. You know, historically, they've added 1% to the retail price index. So it looks likely that rail fares will go up by 5% next year. We need to grow the market for rail. We don't do that by increasing fares constantly.
And the Welsh Rugby Union says halving the number of its professional teams is the best way to transform the sport in the country. It would mean two of the four clubs in Wales are now at risk. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed up 98 points at 92.88. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, clear spells across much of the UK tonight. Patchy mist and fog developing in eastern England and much of Scotland. A low of 4 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Good evening. The Guardian reports that councils across England are weighing up their own legal challenges after a High Court ruling blocked people seeking asylum from being housed in an Essex hotel. The Conservative-run Broxbourne Council in Hertfordshire said that it was taking legal action on whether it could follow the example of neighbouring Epping Forest District Council, which applied successfully for an injunction to stop asylum seekers being accommodated at the Bell Hotel in town. The ruling has been seized on by the Reform UK leader Nigel Farage because of course it has. Let's talk about this with Stephen Smith. Stephen is the Chief Executive of Care for Calais. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Nick.
The Tories have some nerve protesting about a policy that they instituted, which is housing asylum seekers in hotels, because they, the Tories, had created a backlog in processing their claims. That's the issue, isn't it? It's the backlog.
That's certainly a major part of the issue, yeah. The housing asylum seekers in hotels really started up during COVID. I think it was an emergency measure. But, of course, it was made much, much worse by also during COVID, the Home Office removed, or they had removed for them, the criteria, the speed at which they had to be processing claims, and added to which, of course, at some stage, the Tories said, we're going to stop processing claims. And tens of thousands of people built up in the system, leading to over 400 hotels being used at one stage, and we're still dealing with that situation now.
Yes, it's really quite remarkable when you look at a graph of how many people's claims were processed. It's absolutely cratered during the Tory years when they came into power. and has just now started to be fixed in some way. It's still quite high.
Yeah, I mean, there used to be targets, but as I say, during COVID, those targets were pretty well entirely removed, and I still don't think they've got back to them. And of course, there is a problem with trying to speed up claims, and I think, you know, done professionally, done consistently, done well, we should get that backlog cleared and get people through the system. But we have to be careful about it, because if it's not done professionally, you end up with an awful lot of people homeless out on the streets. And I think that would create a situation even worse than the one we have at the moment.
It's also going to leave the government open to all sorts of legal claims, because if they just rush through people's asylum claims and they get the wrong decision, then that's probably worse than taking their time over it.
Yeah, absolutely it is. Not least because, of course, if the individual feels that they have a genuine claim, they will put in an appeal. And that slows the whole process down. It could come to a sort of stuttering halt. It needs to be done professionally. It needs to be done effectively. And we need to get on top of it. I mean, I keep harking back to the point that in 2002, we had a peak of asylum applications, not dissimilar to what we've got now. But there were no protests in the streets, so there was no violent protests. People moved through the system. We weren't even using hotels in any effective, in any large way at that stage. What's gone so badly wrong that we are where we are now?
Yeah, what has gone so badly wrong?
Well, two or three things. I mean, one is we've already put our finger on it, we've already discussed it, and that the backlog has been allowed to build up massively. But then added to that, there's the demonization of the people living in the hotels. We're seeing that almost everywhere. I noticed an article in the Telegraph only last week. It said that the government had lost track of 150,000 migrants. And against that article was a picture of people coming off a Border Force boat wearing orange life jackets. And, of course, just take a quick glimpse of that and you think, they've lost track of 150,000 people who've come in on small boats. You actually read the article and it was about care workers who'd come in on a care worker visa, and the government had lost track of many of them and where they were. But of course, you just scan that, you think, oh my God, it's all about asylum seekers. Actually, it wasn't at all. And that sort of drip, drip, drip is going on all the time. And it's building up an environment of hate, of nastiness, of violence that really, it's not the country that I know. It's not the country I grew up in.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe those people who are sort of fomenting this grief are—they never went away. They just felt sort of encumbered by society's disapproval, which is now not there anymore. They feel free to express their inner ire.
Yeah, I mean, you could be right, Nick. It could be just allowing people to get all of that xenophobic hatred, racism and so on, all out in the open. I mean, I was looking at some history thing only the other day, sorry, little rabbit hole for 10 seconds, and it was looking at how in 1900 the same sorts of comments were being made about Jews in London at that stage, and there was almost no difference. You could have taken the same comments and put them in a newspaper now, and you think, is that now or is it historic?
Yeah, I mean, people have been saying that we're full for 100 years. And this Bell Hotel in Epping, which is the centre of this move by the local Tory council to get asylum seekers out of their area, it was the hotel that the Tory government in 2020 picked for this very purpose. And Chris Philp, which is one of the Tories loudly complaining about the hotel's use today, was the Under Secretary of State for Immigration at the time. And I'm assuming that he's hoping we don't remember that, which is why I mentioned it.
I bet he's hoping that. I mean, it really is a victory for violent protests, isn't it? Because you're absolutely right. It was used from May 2020 through to March 2021, so nearly a year. It then came back online from October 2022 to April 2024. There were no violent protests outside it at that stage. People just got on with their lives. It was just, okay, there were asylum seekers in the hotel. They were just allowed to get on with it. What has changed? And it comes back to what I'm saying at the moment, this constant feeding of misinformation and hatred and so on. It's just warping the whole situation, and it needs to stop. There needs to be some sort of understanding. There needs to, you know, a reintroduction of compassion, of kindness, of decency. Where is all that going in society at the moment?
Well, I think it's left the building. And Nigel Farage, of course, is on this bandwagon because this is just the sort of thing that will turbocharge his ascendancy. He's spreading grievance to be lapped up by his cult fans. And he's probably assuming that those people do not know that it is his Brexit that has taken away our right to return asylum seekers to France. I mean, if there had been no Brexit, we wouldn't have this problem at all.
Well, if there'd been no Brexit, perhaps we wouldn't have had such a division in society in any case, the sort of fors and against, and the sort of, the expansion of nationalism to such an extent. I mean, the whole world is becoming more and more global all the time. International trade, international holidays, setting around, all of that. And yet, all of a sudden, it seems that we are back to trying to be Little Britain.
And it's ironic, isn't it, that the protests that aren't just about not wanting foreigners around their way are ostensibly about protecting women and children. And two out of every five people arrested during the anti-immigrant riots last year had been reported to the police for domestic abuse, actual bodily harm, stalking, breach of non-molestation orders, controlling behaviour. Women and girls would be safer in an asylum hotel than they would be in the houses of the people who are protesting outside.
But we as a charity, deal with people seeking asylum day in, day out. The vast majority, something like 75 to 80% who have their refugee claims approved, have come from the most appalling situations. Conflict, war, modern-day slavery, torture, trafficking, you name it. Countries like, well, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Sudan, you name it. They don't want to go. You know, there's this picture painted that they're all murderers, rapists, paedophiles. This is completely untrue. It's a complete distortion. And yet, for some reason, people are just believing all that.
It's because they want to. I mean, if instead of Iran, Iraq and Afghanistan, they came from Norway, Sweden and Denmark, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, we've got about 200,000 people, refugees. I'm not disputing that they should be here, but something like 200,000 refugees from Ukraine. I think it's probably about 100,000 have come over from Hong Kong. I mean, both of those figures are up there with refugees from other countries. I mean, you're absolutely right, Nate. There's a huge element of what appears to be racism about this. And what really upsets me is we constantly reduce people to numbers, to statistics. How many came across this week? How many have come across since Starmer took control? How many are in the hotels? It's all about numbers. It's taking away individuals as people. I mean, I've probably got more sympathy for refugees than many because I was a veteran for many years. I've served in several war zones. I've seen the start of this, what people are fleeing from. And I've been shot at, I've been near explosions, but I always knew that I could go home. But for most of these people, their homes have already gone.
And when they come, let's deal with what I know is will come on the phones. Why are they always, why do they all come here? Deal with that one.
Well, of course, there's several answers to this, and I hope we've got time. It will only take me about 30 seconds to do it. Right, four out of five refugees stay in adjacent countries to the country that they're already fleeing from. And if you look at the numbers from Afghanistan, there's something like 6.5 million have been dislocated in Afghanistan. About 4.5 million of those have been dislocated inside the country, so that leaves about 2.5 million outside. Many, many of those, probably the vast majority, have moved across the border, most into Pakistan, but some into Iran as well. So most actually stay close to the country. They want to go home. So they stay close to those countries. Why do people come here? Well, you need to look at a range of reasons. Obviously, perhaps I should say first that in terms of numbers, we're something like fifth or sixth down the list behind other countries like Germany, Italy, Greece, Spain, in Europe. But if you went per head of population, we always hover in terms of European countries at around 20th down the list. So this whole, why do they all come here? That's a falsehood from the outset. But those that do come here, you can understand the reasons. If you speak English, and you know, it's probably one of the most, I don't know about Chinese, but it's probably the most popular language in the world. If you speak English, it's a good way to get a job if you can speak the language of the country you're in. If you're in France or if you're in Germany and your only language is English and your national language, whatever it is, Urdu or whatever, then you will go to a country that speaks English. Because of our colonial and international past, we have many people here from some of the countries that are being affected at the moment. And so if you've got relatives to go to, if you've got friends to go to, that will be a draw as well. And we shouldn't overlook the fact that many of those people have been very close to us in all sorts of situations. One of the largest populations coming at the moment comes from Afghanistan. Of course, we pulled out of Afghanistan after 20 years with almost no notice. What happens to all those individuals, hundreds, thousands of individuals in the Afghan National Army, people who supported us as interpreters with British forces, people who worked as civil servants in the government, people who thought that they had some freedom as journalists or politicians or whatever, what happens to them? And of course, they want to come to us because they think we're going to offer safety. And not many people know this, but only, I think it's 4 weeks ago, the only two remaining safe routes for people to come from Afghanistan to UK were closed down. So if anything, that's going to drive up the numbers crossing numerous countries to get to northern France.
And of the people that do come here, people complain that they're all working age, they're young working age men. Well, that's less of a problem, more of an asset that we're not using, because, you know, since Brexit, since we waved goodbye to all of those good people who were doing the work that we didn't want to do, farmers, meat packers, warehouses, they're all suffering from staff shortages, leaving billions of pounds of food rotting in the fields or work undone. Those problems could be solved if asylum seekers could work while their cases were processed, no?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, in order to try and overcome some of the situation at the moment, I would very much encourage that those seeking refugee status should be allowed to work. But it's not just those that can work in the fields. I mean, there's this constant underlying story that they're all poverty-stricken and they're coming here for El Dorado or whatever. Last time I looked at the statistics of this, there was something like 1,200 doctors stuck in the system who couldn't work because they were going through the refugee process. It would cost something like £25,000 to bring each of those doctors up to NHS standards, but it would cost £250,000 plus to train a doctor from scratch for the NHS. Why on earth aren't we exploiting that asset to the full? And when it comes down to people of military age, well, sometimes that's self-defining. I mean, if you were, as I mentioned before, supporting British forces in Afghanistan, you're almost certainly a young man of military age. If you're coming from Eritrea, fleeing from national service, most people in the country have no idea about this, but it's not like national service in UK in the 50s. It's an open-ended contract of slave labour. You go into it, you don't know when you're coming out the other end. The food is absolutely meagre and you're paid a pittance and kept in appalling conditions and subject to violence and torture on a regular basis. But of course, people fleeing that will be young men of military age. And finally, those that flee have to make incredibly difficult routes. If you're coming down through Africa, you will almost inevitably end up going across Libya to get to the Mediterranean. Libya is well known for militias and criminal gangs taking people hostage, beating them, torturing them, asking for money from their relatives back in their home country before they're released. It's horrendous. If you're a family in one of those African countries or even a Middle Eastern country and you're expecting people to go through that, you send the youngest and fittest first to go through the route because they're the ones most likely to survive it. And that's why we see the situation we've got.
Let's just talk about the people in the hotel. I mean, assuming that this sort of feeling catches fire and councils across the land are going to be turfing people out of hotels, where are they going to go?
Yeah, well, kind of. Your guess is as good as mine. So, going back to what I said before about 2002, we had people at that stage, barely anyone in hotels, but in what we call dispersal accommodation. So in houses of multiple occupancy, in flats, spread throughout the community. So not targets, mass targets of hatred, just people integrating into communities. And, of course, when they get refugee status, they've already started to understand how everything works. So it's much easier to, again, integrate once that status is approved. So that's what I would recommend. But, of course, at the moment, we're hearing all sorts of bonkers ideas like, let's take them all, put them on a boat and send them all back to France. But yeah, well, that's not going to work. Is it under international law with the French? Let's put them in tents on an island somewhere. okay, for how long? You know, do you keep them there forever? Is that some sort of permanent detention camp, an internment camp forever? I mean, there's some nut job ideas coming out there. My solution would be, okay, we've got what we've got. We are where we are. Let's get the system working properly. Let's clear the backlog. Let's move fast. And that way the hotels will reduce very, very quickly. And people who are seeking safety will get that safety and will be able to get on with their lives.
And just finally, people imagine that these people in hotels are living a life of Riley. You know, they're ordering from room service and they're watching Sky Sports and, you know, getting a massage in the hotel spa. What's the reality?
I was on a panel debate on a TV show this morning and a well-known journalist actually said, in these four-star luxury hotels where they get room service, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, for starters, most of the hotels are pretty run down. Most of the rooms are overcrowded. It's not like a four-star hotel that most of the hotels, of course, aren't four-star hotels. We're never four-star hotels. Those are probably down on their luck and falling apart at the seams, so quite pleased to have the custom. The way they operate is, yes, there are three meals a day, but usually public rooms are screened off. There's sort of plastic matting to protect carpets all over the place. Often we come across, most likely, I mean, this isn't infrequent, we come across hotels where there's damp, there's infestations of bugs, of rats, of mice, of meagre food, of poor fire regulation standards, of poor safety standards, poor electrical standards. It can be absolutely appalling. Of course, people are stuck there for ages. I was talking to a former politician of an African nation probably about a month ago. He'd come over to UK on holiday with his wife and four kids, and while he was over here, he was told if he went back, he was on a death list, and several of his former colleagues had already been killed. He couldn't go back. He ended up in one of those hotels, and you can imagine that, with a wife and four kids, all under the age of about 12, stuck in one hotel room for month after month while his refugee status was approved. It has been approved now, but it's the sort of circumstance that many people are finding themselves in, and they only have £9 a week to get by on. So they're not getting lots of benefits. They're not getting room service. They're not coming down to a massive buffet breakfast. It's absolutely the bare minimum.
Good to talk to you, Stephen. Thanks so much for that. Stephen Smith, Chief Executive of Care for Calais. So what do you make of this? Councils across England weighing up their own legal challenges after a High Court ruling blocked people seeking asylum from being housed in an Essex hotel. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
LBC.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair, and if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes. The ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe, to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-road adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge, helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex, as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
So we're talking about asylum claimants who are in hotels and are being turfed out. One hotel, this very famous Bell Hotel, isn't it, in Epping, has had many protests outside, and councils across England now weighing up their own legal challenges after the High Court blocked people seeking asylum from being housed in an Essex hotel. And just to give you an idea of the numbers, there's 32,345 asylum seekers being housed temporarily in UK hotels, a number that was almost in total the fault of the Conservatives and those that brought us that precious Brexit. But the government seems to be getting on top of it to a certain extent, because that number is down 15% from the end of last December and is 16% lower than at the same point a year earlier. But in the meantime, tensions are being, they're high and being ramped up by the usual suspects. 0345 6060 973. Twickenham. Hello, Paul.
Nick, I'm so pleased to be on. Nick, there's some fundamental misunderstanding here, I think, on the part of the other councils who are seeking to emulate what's happened at Epping. I come at this, Nick, from a planning background. I used to be a member of the Royal Town Planning Institute, and I've dealt with cases that change from hotels to hostels. Now, in order to be granted this injunction, the council had to show two things. One, that there'd been a breach of planning law, i.e. that the building was being used as a hostel rather than a hotel, and those are different matters in planning law.
Right.
But very much more importantly, to get an injunction, they're not given out like confetti. You have to show, the person seeking the injunction has to show that very serious harm, or at least serious harm, is being caused by that breach of planning control. So you don't get an injunction for building a fence 2 inches taller than the law allows. You might get an injunction for building it 2 metres taller. But it's got to relate to the use. Now, the use that's been declared to not have planning permission is the use of this building as a hostel.
And what's the difference?
There's a difference between a hostel and a hotel. Often hostels have self-catering. They often have bunk beds. There's a whole range of things. But the important point, Nick, is that if you seek an injunction against a hostel, you have to show that it's unauthorized and it's causing serious harm. It is causing serious harm. Not protesters outside throwing bricks through the window or shouting. The use itself must cause harm. And environmental planning terms, harm is things like excessive noise, excessive traffic, smells, smoke, that kind of environmental nuisance. Mm. And if you can show the judge in the High Court that the use is not only operating without planning permission, but is causing very serious harm that needs to be stopped right away because of the harm it's causing, then you're likely to be granted that injunction. And I've been in the High Court myself on several cases, including changes from hotel to hostel.
Right.
Now, in this case, Nick, vital point here is a run-down building occupied by asylum seekers is not making excessive noise or smoke or smells or traffic or any other generally recognised environmental problem. The only disturbance that's associated with it is a lot of
people outside,
what I regard as thugs, standing outside on the road, objecting to the people who are in the building. Now, if other councils think that they can also go along and get injunctions, they will also have to show very serious harm.
Right, and they might not be... Sorry to jump in, but they might not be able to do that, but I don't think that that would necessarily work against their interests, because then they will be able to say, oh, well, you know, this activist judge is unpatriotic, or it's just another example of two-tier justice. So I don't really think, for the interest of the people that are behind this, that would actually be a negative for them. In fact, it would just play into their sense of whining grievance. But that's an interesting point you brought up there, Paul. Thanks for that. See if I can squeeze one more in before the news. Aylesford. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Nick.
Tony.
Hello, yeah. Not the caller before, but the person you were speaking to at the beginning of the hour.
Yeah.
Like, I've worked in local government, council tax and council tax benefits. I didn't do housing and stuff like that, but it was all sort of like related and stuff. They are not living in luxury, and I can't understand why people think that they are on £7 a day, £49, 18 a week. So I just wanted to say that this whole thing in Epping, this illegal immigration lark, the whole thing just appalls me. First of all, they are people. Where's the compassion? Secondly, it's so depressing. And lastly, about this is. Even without illegal immigration, I don't think these people are going to be better off. I don't think it will affect their lives. And do you know what? I didn't like the people a few years ago saying, branding people racist and stuff like that. I would have been like, oh, no, you need to be careful. They're not used to them sort of, used to it, or they've never lived in London or something like that. But I think this country is a growing country of racists, more than I ever thought. And I think, have you seen Black Mirror before? Lastly, Black Mirror, it's a series. Have you seen that before?
No.
No, there's an episode, it's either called White Bear or Blue Bear. It's an hour long, and basically everyone in the country is just disillusioned with politics and politicians. And what happens is there's a blue bear who's a teddy bear, an animated thing that's being presented by someone on a microphone, and he gets voted in. And this is a bit in the future. I think we'll be dead before then, but you just see what happens when this sort of thing happens. And I'll tell you what, if Nigel Farage gets in, be careful what you wish for, because that man is dangerous. And I just think this whole thing just disgusts me.
Okay. Thanks, Tony. 0345 6060 973. I don't think that it's there's an increasing number of people who are racist. I just think that they never went away. They just didn't feel comfortable expressing those thoughts out loud, not since, you know, the 1970s or 80s. It was socially unacceptable. Now, very acceptable. Also, let's be honest, a lot of fun. It's exciting for those people chucking bricks and screaming at hotels. 0345 6060 973. More of your calls on this, but coming up immediately after the news, NATO defence chiefs held what they called a candid discussion today about what security guarantees they could offer Kyiv. We'll be talking more about that. 10:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Daryl Jackson.
The Israeli military has entered the first stages of its planned assault on Gaza City. A spokesman says the IDF already has a hold on the outskirts after Israel's defence minister previously approved a plan to occupy the city. A man who shot an officer with a crossbow after stabbing his neighbour in a long-standing dispute has been jailed for 9 years. 55-year-old Jason King was eventually shot in the stomach by police in High Wycombe after refusing to put down the weapon. And the UK and Russia have issued each other with sanctions. British officials are targeting financial groups with asset freezes, while Moscow's accused journalists of spreading anti-Russian stories. LBC weather, clear spells across much of the UK tonight. Patchy mist and fog developing in eastern England and much of Scotland, lows of 4 degrees.
LBC.
Hey, Mum. So, you know we met Zara, my financial advisor?
Yeah.
Yeah, from St James's Place. Well, she drafted our plan so you can get that bungalow near me. Oh, and Sam, that lovely carer we found, will drop in. And I can bring over my signature shepherd's pie. Hoi!
Big decisions call for invaluable advice. Visit St James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 2025.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
4. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Okay, more of your calls on the asylum hotel issue to come on 0345 6060 973. But let's talk about Ukraine for a moment. Security discussions on Ukraine without Moscow are a road to nowhere, said the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who also said that the US has an increasingly clear understanding of the root causes of the Ukraine crisis. By which I presume he means Donald Trump is increasingly parroting Kremlin propaganda. But let's talk about this with Mark Leite. Mark is the former spokesman for NATO and a former defence correspondent for the BBC. Hello, Mark.
Good evening.
So the Russian foreign minister, Wily Sergei Lavrov, says that Russia is in favour of security guarantees for Ukraine. Do you think that's true?
Well, only in the sense of the Ukraine they want, which is a neutralised Ukraine effectively controlled by Russia with a small army which can be swept aside. When he talks about security guarantees, he's saying that Russia must have a veto and that China must be involved. So, in effect, security guarantees to Ukraine in Russian terms means Russian control of Ukraine.
And Lavrov also said that the so-called coalition of the willing is trying to aggressively escalate the Ukraine situation. Is that true?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Ukraine, the Russians live in a parallel reality in the sense that they're the ones who invaded Ukraine twice now with the full-scale invasion in 2022. So where is the aggression here? The aggression is purely on the Russian side. And the fight now is between the Ukrainians wanting sovereignty to decide their own future and the Russians saying, no, you don't. You must be in our sphere of influence and increasingly direct control. And I think what this does do, though, is it highlights the very real issues about the problem of getting any kind of deal. And that President Trump's kind of, I can get this done quickly. No, he can't.
Yeah, Trump has said that he would give security guarantees. Do we know what that means?
No, we don't. And to be blunt, I don't think President Trump does either. The security guarantees, it's actually a very complex thing to give. You see casual things about NATO Article 5-like guarantees. It's a meaningless phrase in this context. Are they going to... how would they react if the Russians attacked Ukraine after a deal? The Americans have said they won't put boots on the ground. There's vague talk about air power support. The European coalition of the willing is now discussing what they mean by putting troops in. Would they fight the Russians? And it doesn't look like they would. So this is incredibly vague stuff. And to develop a security guarantee, if there's a deal, assumes two things. First, there's a deal, which is really nowhere near being done. And secondly, what kind of security guarantee, what kind of force would you do, how much would you fight, rules of engagement. So we're at very early stages in an extremely uncertain environment.
Yeah, do we actually have the number of troops ready to provide any sort of security to Ukraine, a country that's 2.5 times the size of this one?
Certainly not, no. And we could, along with other people, provide that. And of course, it's not just about having troops. You can do air power and so on. So we could not do it on our own, anything like it. And it may not really be necessary. Although the Ukrainians are a little bit on the back foot at the moment, this is an army that has fought off the Russians now since 2022, and the Russian advances are still fairly glacial. So if there was a security deal of any kind, the frontline troops could still be the Ukrainians, and they are more than capable of doing fighting, and they're a very big army, as you might expect. But they will need intelligence support, they will need lots of equipment being supplied to them, they will need training, they could certainly use air power and so on. So you could see that a deal with the Ukrainians providing the basic fighting power supported behind it would be viable. But there's still then a lot of questions. How much would we support them? Would we shoot down Russian aircraft, et cetera, et cetera? So there's something there. But my goodness, we've got a long way to go if we're going to get something. And then it goes back. If Russia doesn't accept any kind of peace deal, there is no peace deal.
Do you think that the mere presence of EU and UK troops would hamper Vladimir Putin's expansionist aims? Or is he more likely to engineer some way to go around them?
It would certainly hamper them. And I think that's fair. But he would also want to test it. He would want to see if he could push the edge of the envelope to see if how would they react. What I'm reading and what other people are seeing is that we're not looking at getting into an actual fight with the Russians. So if we were in the background, he would certainly test Ukrainians to see what we would do. Would we send in air power to support them? How could we actually deter? There's a lot of talk about a reassurance force. That's not a deterrent. Reassurance assumes that you're in a stable enough position where you only need reassurance. I don't think we're going to be there. So he would certainly test it, but he would then be taking a chance. So hamper is a fair phrase to use here.
Just, you know, practically, is it a safe assumption that Vladimir Putin isn't really interested in peace at all, that he's just playing us all along? Because why keep up the killing if he's serious about this?
He's not interested in a peace deal that doesn't get him what he wants. That's the point. He's had a maximalist position, which is being reflected today by his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, and then nothing they have said indicates that they have changed that. The only thing that will change that is if they believe that they can't achieve it. In other words, what leverage can we put on the Russians to make them come to the table? And what Donald Trump has done is he has actually systematically removed almost all of the cards. So when he threatened sanctions, and we thought, ooh, change. But then the Alaska summit happened, and suddenly no sanctions. We thought he was going to impose a ceasefire. Now he says he wants a peace deal, which is what Putin wants, before there's a ceasefire. So, in effect, the Americans in particular have ruled out, have withdrawn all the leverage points that they have. There is considerable leverage points, but until they're used, then Putin will think, well, I have no incentive to come to a peace deal which is in any way fair. So I'll stick with my maximalist demands, and that's exactly what's happening at the moment.
Am I imagining it, or does Donald Trump parrot Kremlin talking points? I mean, he says the Ukraine could end the war immediately, that Zelensky has to be flexible, the territory must be exchanged. I mean, for all his talk, he still seems to be blaming Ukraine for Russia's invasion.
At times he certainly has. It was very disturbing on his after the Alaska summit when he said, you know, Zelensky could solve this very quickly. At one level, he's right, of course, because Zelensky could surrender and then it's over. And Putin could solve it very quickly because he could withdraw. But when you've got two sides diametrically opposed, there isn't an easy way out. There isn't a quick solution. So, yes, often he is taking Putin's side. And in many ways, he almost as bad as being the negotiator that he has used. Steve Witkoff, who's met with Putin several times, and frankly is a credulous idiot in many respects. He really parrots it. And when I say that, I really do mean it. I think in the history of negotiation, he must be one of the worst international negotiators of all time. He has parroted it. He came back from the meeting he had with Putin before the Alaska summit, saying that two or three things had happened which gave the impression of the Russians making concessions. And he was 180 degrees wrong. And that may have been quite damaging because it gave the impression that there was movement by the Russians when there was no movement at all. He really is a menace.
He's also a billionaire, as an aside, he's a billionaire, and it does bring into stark relief how little intelligence is necessary to become worth that much money if he, as inept as he is, kind of achieves that.
Well, it's a mystery to me in the sense that his money comes from being a New York real estate guy, and maybe he's extremely good at that. But when it comes to international diplomacy, he is naive and ignorant and being very credulous. Maybe we should all be New York state agents, because quite clearly it would seem there's money to be made there.
Yeah. Just if the troops, let's say in the best circumstance, in the short term, if troops secure the lines of occupation as they are now, would that not just be giving Putin a sort of springboard to regather his assets and then launch further attacks on Ukraine in the future?
Potentially, but it cuts both ways. I think we have to be practical here, and I think a lot of people in Ukraine know this, including my Ukrainian friends who I connect with. They are not going to get back the territory that Russia has seized anytime soon. But they don't want to concede it as a legal entity, what you would call de facto, it's what it is, rather than de jure, which you give it away. If you freeze the lines where they are, they are in the main very defensible, especially the territory in the Donbass, where there's a big fortress belt. And if at that time you pour in money and weapons to Ukrainians, you support them to build up, they've shown their ability to hold the line. So freezing the lines where they are, putting in support to the Ukrainians, putting in weapons to them, helping them with training, means that, of course, the Russians, as you say, will be building up. But so would the Ukrainians, and they've already proved that they are very prickly porcupine. So I think you could do things with the Ukrainians which would really act as a deterrent to Russia, especially if they're supported by us through money, weapon supplies, training, and a deterrence force on the ground, even if it's not on the front line.
What do you make of the reports of what is thought to be a military drone that exploded in eastern Poland? Because Belarus is between Russia and Poland, and Belarus leader Alexander Lukashenko is a Putin ally. Is Russia just testing the limits with incursions and asymmetric attacks on the West to sort of normalize Russian aggression on us?
I think with the drone, it's probably just a misfire. I think your broader point is Russia testing the ground. They do what known as hybrid warfare all over the place, and they are always trying to undermine, but usually not through direct military action. So I suspect that the drone was just a technical error, and there's been other ones they've had where it has gone into Polish territory just over the line. So on this occasion, I think it's probably just a mistake. But I think your broader point that the Russians are testing resolve, that they will use sabotage attacks and so on, they're doing that. They've supported sabotage attacks in this country. So that the Russians are always pushing, always.
Very good to talk to you, Mark. Thanks very much for your time. That's Mark Lacey, former spokesman for NATO and former defence correspondent for the BBC. Going to take a short break, then back to your thoughts on the asylum hotel issue. LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It is to the events in Epping that we turn. The High Court judgment that sees 28 days given in order to remove the people in the asylum hotel because the High Court say it can no longer be used for that purpose. Is this a ruling that you celebrate? Kay Marsh, Community Engagement and Migrant Support Coordinator at the Samfire Project.
Well, it's worrying, isn't it? I mean, if not hotels, then where?
Rudy's in Bristol.
They should be detained, especially if they've got no identification. They are criminals because they've entered the country illegally.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
There now follows a message from the Prime Minister.
Some of you may know, my husband is being held hostage. They are targeting me. They have weaponized my family. I will not be threatened. My loyalties are to this country. I will not allow it to be held to ransom. And anyone who thinks that I would has badly underestimated me.
Hostage, starring Saran Jones, coming soon only on Netflix.
The ASA regulates UK ads across all media, including radio, to make sure they stick to the rules. You should be able to trust the ads you hear, whether you love them or hate them. So we're by your side and keeping our ears open because every little helps. The ASA, keeping ads legal, decent, honest and truthful. Oh, yes.
Power up your business with Peugeot's new LCV range. Discover the new Partner, Expert and Boxer, available in all electric or diesel. With up to 20 driver assistance systems and complete connectivity. Now available on 0% APR with a 20% deposit. Order before 30th September 2025 to drive away in your new Peugeot van. Peugeot. Business powered. Conditional sale. Business users only. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's 18 plus. Stellantis Financial Services.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
We're talking about asylum hotels. The Conservative-run Broxbourne Council in Hertfordshire said it was taking legal advice on whether it could follow the example of the neighbouring Epping Forest District Council, which applied successfully for an injunction to stop asylum seekers being accommodated at the Bell Hotel in town. And that, I think, depended on the change of use from a hotel to a hostel. They didn't have planning permission for that. That's the reason why. And so that probably will not be upheld in the case of other councils. But, as I said before, it's quite likely that that won't deter them from doing it, because then they'll be able to say, well, you know, these activist lefty judges are ruining our once great nation. Tildesley, Malcolm.
Yes, well, just briefly commenting on the chap you had on before, most of what he said, that NATO guy, to me, was fantasy. But move on, anyway.
Fantasy?
Yeah, of course it was. But
What do you mean? What was fantastical about it?
What was fantastical about it was the total lack of understanding as to the reality of Russia's legitimate demands.
Oh, you're a Kremlin apologist.
No, not at all.
Sounds like it.
I'm just looking at... Anyway, let's move on to the asylum issue.
Okay, let's see what this one's like. Go ahead.
Right, well, I'm pro-Brexit, okay. Now,
no.
I know you disagree with that, but as it happens, there's 17.4 million people who agree with me.
Well, not anymore, Malcolm,
well,
not
you may
anymore.
You may make that claim, yes, but I would say that if there was to be a rerun of the referendum,
you'd
it would
lose.
Be more like 20 million
you
to 15.
You would lose.
No, we'd win easily.
No poll suggests that's true. None.
Yes,
not one single one.
At the Brexit referendum, if you remember, Remain was going to win, wasn't it? Can you not remember that?
I remember that Nigel Farage said that we should have a second referendum if it was 48 to 52, and it was, and then suddenly, because he won, he didn't want a second referendum anymore.
Not so much he won, but 17.4 million people.
Oh, my God.
Won.
Malcolm,
anyway,
you sound like
refugees.
A pub bore. Get on with it.
The key thing is that they are not genuine refugees, most of these people.
Do you know that? They are mostly genuine refugees because the vast majority of them have their asylum cases, upheld.
But they're economic migrants as well.
Oh, God, you're a tedious man. Just because it's like having a conversation with Donald Trump with a northern accent. Just because you say it out loud doesn't make it so, Malcolm. South Shields. Hi, Joanne.
Nick, what a wonderful man. Nick, do you know...
It was special. Let's just agree on that.
Yeah, I only listened to LBC 10 o'clock on Friday and Saturday and Mystery Hour with James. Do you know what this reminds... I have a vested interest in this because I'm the mother... I'm a mother-in-law of a non-white immigrant, should my son and his wife come to the UK. I'm so, I used to live on a council estate. I live in a town that was built on shipbuilding and coal mines. It's really impoverished, and it was had the first race riots known in this country. We're known as sand dancers from the Yemeni seamen that came here, and we asked them to come over here because of war shortages. You're right that it's out-and-out racism and buggery. In a way, it's almost a class war, but I've had various conversations with my son saying, yes, come back to the UK, son, but why not? You're in IT, you both work in tech, why not look at Aberdeen? Why not look at Scotland? Only because they didn't have race rights. Even when I walk the dog with my sister, I'm disabled, that's my exercise, I'm really careful who I talk to, because people seem to have the legitimacy to now air those views, and you think, well, because I live in this town, am I going to share it? No, I put them straight. What I like to say to people is, if you have these views, please don't order a takeaway. Please throw your iPhone in the bin. Please don't use the health system. Please don't send your kids to school. For God's sake, we would crumble without immigration. Why is America the strongest country in the world? It was built on immigrants. They are good for our country. Do you know what it's like, Nick? This is my last word because I'm full of righteous anger. And I ain't smug about it because I'm frightened. It's like the witch trials. This will go down in history as like the peasants with the pitchforks ready to find anyone with a brown skin. You know, I've even stopped watching the news, and Penny Morden's on TV.
Oh.
She's the ugliest attractive person, honestly.
The ugliest attractive person?
Nice on the outside, hideous on the in.
Oh, I got it.
Honestly. Yes.
Well, I would hesitate before correcting people in public, Joanne. Take great caution. All right.
You just get torn shreds off, but keep us laughing on the weekend, Nick, please.
All right, I'll try my very best. Thanks a lot, Joanne. 0345-6060-973. Carl says, what I want to ask is where the migrants are getting brand new life jackets from. That's a lot of life jackets issued so far. If I were the people smuggler, why would I be issuing a brand new life jacket to every individual? Well, that's a niche topic, Carl. I hadn't considered that. Leighton, hello, Tony.
Hi, good evening, Nick. I'm really pleased to be on your show. I've been listening to you for years.
Oh, thanks.
But first time I've called, actually. But what I wanted to say was that these people that have been protesting to get rid of the refugees in hotels, they're going to end up scoring an own goal, because when they're moved out of the hotels, we're going to have to put them somewhere, most likely in homes of multiple occupation.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubt that when they do that, that it's going to be all the refugees moving over to those homes. So it might be maybe two people are living there already, and then they move some of the refugees in there. And landlords, those greedy landlords who all of a sudden envisage that there's going to be a 5-year contract with the government, would turf out the locals that they've got. So all of a sudden, instead of having the refugees in the hotel where they could see them, the people that have been complaining, they have them living amongst themselves. But here's where the own goal comes in. Hold on.
Yep.
Lots of people, when they speak about refugees, they go on and say, oh, they're terrible, they've done this. They've never met them. Now, when some of them live with the refugees, they're going to see that not all of them are bad. So when people like Nick Farage and the rest are spouting their lies about refugees, people who actually are honest will say, well, actually, that doesn't sound like the refugee that lives with me. So that's the own goal that they're going to end up scoring.
And I think by if that actually happens, and it seems quite likely that landlords would be rubbing their hands with glee at the thought of a multi-year contract with the government, which is just money in the bank, that yep. That will, of course, lead to rises in rent for other properties around the area, which will become more scarce. So that is the other side of that. All right, thanks, Tony. Carl says, oh no, that's the life jackets guy. Nicola says, I believe things changed in this country with Brexit, which opened up a Pandora's box of xenophobia and racism. Think back to the Polish plumbers, people from Romania. In fact, any European citizen, they were unpainted the devil incarnate, painted maybe, the devil incarnate, with Theresa May saying that they were citizens of nowhere. I don't really recognise my country anymore, says Nicola. Well, it's the same country as it ever was. I just think that those people feel more comfortable vocalising their inner ire. It just seems to me that, you know, those people protesting, I've watched videos of them, and they look and sound like they're a left-behind underclass. Essentially a drain on society, taking more from the country that they profess to love than they contribute. I mean, they're not in work because they're yelling at hotels during work hours. We'd be better off swapping them for a similar number of the people living in the hotels that they're screaming at. Tell me I'm wrong. 0345 6060 973. You can text 84850. Email nicka@lbc.co.uk. Going to take a break for the news. Coming up, a row has broken out over a campaign for raising money to coat the local community in England flags. It's connected, yet separate. The timing of the campaign, which has come amid anti-migrant protests and increased far-right activity, has raised some tensions and sparked debate on whether the flag of St. George is a symbol of English patriotism or whether it's been usurped by the far-right to be a flag associated with division. I'll be speaking to Billy Bragg to get his thoughts. Coming up to 11 o'clock on LBC, Friday, ordinarily Friday, Saturday, Sunday night at 10, Nick Abbott, LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Israeli military says it's taken the first steps of its planned operation to occupy Gaza City. Israel's defence minister previously approved a plan to take control of the area. Tens of thousands of army reservists have now been called up by Israel's military. Ido Ilam, an Israeli, has told LBC he's refusing to be drafted in.
The consequences for refusal, at least for the mandatory call, is imprisonment. I was imprisoned when I refused for the first time. Right now, there is in prison more than 8 other refuseniks, 18, 19 years old, who are sitting out their term because they just told the army, we will not enlist.
The Conservative leaders said to be encouraging Tory-controlled councils to consider legal challenges against the use of hotels to house asylum seekers. It's reported tonight Kemi Badenoch said Epping Forest District Council achieved a victory for local people after a court allowed it to block migrants staying at a hotel there. Sabe Dilu from Stand Up to Racism told LBC public opinion's a reflection of political discussion.
In Epping, asylum seekers have been housed in the Bell Hotel for 5 years. Why has it just become a problem now? It's because that alleged crime that took place several weeks ago has been seized on by far-right groups and has been used to whip up racism and sow division.
A man's been jailed for 9 years for a crossbow attack on an officer after he stabbed a neighbour in High Wycombe last year. 55-year-old Jason King was eventually shot in the stomach by police after refusing to put the weapon down. LBC's Emma Corr's been following the case.
Judge Jonathan Cooper said the 55-year-old had been motivated in part during the shooting by revenge and a sense of grievance towards his neighbours. PC Foster, the injured officer, described in court how he'd seen King grinning before he shot him.
A former priest has been found guilty of 17 counts of indecent assault against 9 women while leading an evangelical movement. 68-year-old Christopher Bryan from Wilmslow in Cheshire was lead of the 9 o'clock service in Sheffield in the 80s and 90s. Welsh Rugby has proposed halving the number of professional teams in the country from 4 to 2. The aim is to improve the fortunes of the national team. LBC weather. Clear spells across much of the UK tonight. Patchy mist and fog developing in eastern England and much of Scotland. A low of 4 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
An increasingly organised campaign that claims to be purely about patriotism is putting up flags all over the shop. This is not racist and never will be, reads the fundraising page of a group calling itself the Withall Flaggers, which by Tuesday afternoon had raised more than £2,000, apparently, mostly in small donations. They said, "We have members of the community of all ethnicities and religions stopping by and praising what we're doing, so please don't call this racist." Let's talk about this with Billy Bragg. Billy is the singer-songwriter and musician and anti-racism campaigner. Hello, Billy.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good, thanks. Are they protesting too much?
They are protesting, aren't they? I think anybody who has to, in their sort of like opening sentence, has to say, look, we're not really racist. That doesn't mean they're racist, but it does mean they're aware that there is a certain question to be asked when you use the flag. And I think that admission in and of itself puts us into rather difficult territory with regard to what they're doing with the flag. Now, this isn't true of all flags. You know, if you see the flag of St. George flying from a church tower when you're in the countryside somewhere, you know what the context is. Or you might see it when there's a World Cup on or something like that, and you know the context there clearly is support for sport, which is a whole, you know, a broad community experience. But in the case of the Withall Flaggers, the question is, what is their motivation behind this?
Yeah, I mean, it's that typical sentence that starts, I'm not racist, but...
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's a question because they're not out there with their reasoning. You know, they're not like say they put up a community Facebook page and said, we want to do a St. George's Day event. Everybody's welcome. Come on down. You know, we're going to celebrate the fact that St. George was born in the Lebanon and he came here and, you know, it's kind of like now it's part of our story, that kind of thing. You can see the context with that. But when it's just suddenly a load of flags appear, you do have to think to yourself, well, what's the meaning of this?
Yeah, go on.
No, just it depends who's kind of the motivations behind the people that are putting the flag up. Donkeys years ago now, it was the early 2000s, I think it was during the European Championships. There was a anti-BNP demonstration about half an hour away from here that I went to, and on the way I stopped for petrol. And in the petrol station, I'd never seen it before, they were selling little England flags that you could put in your car window.
Mm.
They were like £2 each. I'd never seen it before. I thought, that's interesting. It was clear what they were about because it said, you know, European Championships, support the team and everything. Anyway, when we got to the demonstration, there was, you know, about 50 people there, but there was one guy who was kind of heckling us and sort of like clearly representing the BNP side of the argument, and he had one of these flags. And I thought to myself afterwards, if I'd have realised that was going to happen, I would have bought a dozen of those flags and given them to everybody in our demonstration so that we could then make that point ourselves, that this flag doesn't belong to just one people. The flag doesn't just belong to the people. It doesn't even just belong to the people who feel patriotic. It belongs to everybody or nobody. So in that sense, you can't impose your sense of this is how I feel about my flag on everybody else.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Because like you say, in circumstances around sporting events and, you know, national holidays and so on, it takes on one meaning. But absent of that, it's almost as though our flag has been taken by the far right. They took it as their own. They've been brandishing it for decades on their publicity and literature, you know, the various parties that have come and gone. It's almost as though it used to be ours, but now it's kind of like a white supremacist symbol now, outside of the events that we've just been talking about.
It is. I mean, it's not just us, though, Nick. I did a talk once about Englishness at a festival, and we had a great time, and it was all very calm and discussed. I think we sang Jerusalem at the end. It was a lot of fun. But afterwards, a guy from Germany came up and said to me, mate, if you think you have trouble with flags in your country, you should come to my country. And, you know, and they were talking about, the weight of German history and what that means to people who see the flag and how they do it. So I don't think it's an uncommon thing. But I don't know how the people who have organised this campaign, these Withall Flaggers, how they feel in the sense that the flag belongs to them and other people can't have an opinion about it. Because when they said, oh, it's not racist, they're in some ways trying to say, we don't care how you feel about the flag. This is our feeling and you've got to accept our feeling because we're in England and it's our flag. And I think that's, you know, I don't think you can do that with flags. For instance, I'll show you what I mean. next month on the 20th of September, I'm doing a benefit for Palestinian Aid at the Shepherd's Bush Empire. And there will be a lot of Palestinian flags there. I'll probably have one on stage. Now, there will be some people who say, well, by flying that flag, you're supporting terrorism. Whereas we know and our intentions are purely with regard to humanitarian aid for people in Gaza. So when you pick up a flag, you can't expect to just have your meaning of it accepted by everybody. You've got to recognize there are other people, and they may be wrong. You know, in the case of the Palestinian flag, I think they are. And, you know, those people who think the Withals are all racist, they're probably wrong as well. They're probably, their intentions are positive, but you can't really have any ambiguity. You've got to be absolutely sure about these things. Otherwise, it simply looks like it's a provocation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who these the Withal flaggers are, but it seems to me that people that put these flags up, they know what they're doing. They're playing a game. It's nod and a wink stuff, isn't it?
I think, unfortunately, in the context, the current context where there's so much hostility towards people who have come to this country without any papers, I think it's a bit of a tinderbox around that issue. We've seen that with people outside the asylum hostels. And I think people are, you know, clearly the people who are demonstrating there are very angry about the situation. And it only takes a small thing to set this off into a spiral of violence, as we saw as possible, you know, to happen at any time. So I think in this climate, I think we just, as I say, it's not about not flying the flag. It's not about being ashamed of the flag. You know, I love our flag. I feel I'm a patriot myself. I love it. But what I don't want is I don't want my flag being used to intimidate my neighbours. I really object to that.
Yeah, that word patriotism, that's sort of loaded, isn't it? And one of the things that they say is their Facebook page reads, or the Facebook page of Operation Raise the Colours says, let's bring back patriotism. Well, they don't mean patriotism, do they? They mean let's cement in the social consciousness what we think. Because I'm patriotic, I want what's best for my country, but I don't make a show of it. I don't, like, nail my colours to the mast. What kind of patriot needs to do that?
Now, anyone who knows anything about left-wing politics will know there's lots of different types of socialism. There's revolutionary socialism, democratic socialism, Christian socialism. And it's the same with patriotism. Because I think a person's identity is their own sense of who they are. And sometimes you feel a bit patriotic, you know, perhaps when the football's on, you feel patriotic, or it might be the monarchist when the coronation was on, you feel patriotic, or trooping the colour or something. And the rest of the time, you don't really think about it. But those people who are trying to enforce patriotism, there are those of us whose patriotism takes a different form. I would say your flag-waving patriot is someone who believes passionately in the symbolism of patriotism. And they like the symbols because symbols are immutable. They never change. They mean the same thing all the time to them. Whereas my patriotism is based on values, the values we have as a society, values of tolerance and empathy, values of, accountability. These are the issues that I feel very strongly about. And I get angry. My patriotism comes out when I see our country, particularly our government, not living up to those values. So I think there are different types of patriotism. And what what we're seeing, I think, with the Withal flaggers is they're trying to enforce their particular type of patriotism on everybody.
It's a trap, though. It's a trap, though, isn't it? You don't love our flag. Well, you don't love our country, then.
Well, I'm trying to be as kind as I can to these people, Nick, without calling them names, because I don't know what's really behind it. I'm just saying that you have to be clear about it. I mean, if we can put that flag up, can we put other flags up as well? Is it okay if I go down there and put up the trans rights flag all over their town? Is that okay? Can I have a go down there and, you know...
I'll assume the answer to that one is no.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, you know, and that's because flags have meaning. You know, the things that I'm talking about, it's true of the trans rights flag, the Palestinian flag, and it's true of the flag of England as well. And that's what that's why you have to be not careful, but you know it's all about context, really, Nick. That's what I'm saying. And in this context, I think there's an ambiguity, and from what's been written on their GoFundMe website, they clearly know there's a provocative aspect to what they're doing. And unfortunately, you know, these things can quickly get out of hand.
Yeah, it's a game, though, isn't it? I mean, the supposed outrage from flag flyers about councils taking the flags down, that's part of the game, isn't it? Pretend to do something patriotic for your country, knowing that the flags will be taken down, and then they can make political capital with, you know, whining grievance, and they can play victimhood.
We unfortunately live in an attention economy, Nick, where, grievance drives clicks. And with our present electoral situation where a party like Reform are picking up votes, they're bound to come in now that they control some councils. I'm sure they're going to come in and say, oh, yeah, we should allow people to put flags on lampposts. Is that what they're going to say? Are they going to say that? Or are they going to say, we're only going to allow... Because these are people who won't allow any other flag other than the flag of our nation on their town hall. They're very particular about what flags they put up at Reform councils. They won't have any other flag except St George and the Union Jack. So if they decide that it's okay for individuals on their own initiative to go around putting up flags, are they going to be happy if they see the Palestinian flag? Are they going to be happy if they see the trans rights flag? Probably not. So I think for them, it's a bit of a dangerous territory to go blundering into.
Well, I'm sure they're absolutely loving this, and that is precisely what they'll do. They seem to be utterly obsessed with the flags of all type, whether to put them up or take them down. And just practically speaking, I mean, I know this is not your field, but if flags are put up by amateurs next to roads, I mean, that's just plainly not safe. They'll fall off into traffic, and you can't see through them if it lands on your windscreen. Councils actually have no choice but to take them down, do they?
Well, again, this is health and safety gone mad, mate. It's, I think that's what they call this bit where we're getting on thin ice ourselves here. I mean, everybody has the right to fly a flag. If you want to, I've got a neighbour who flies, he's got a flag of St George up at the moment. And during the inauguration of Donald Trump, he put up the Stars and Stripes. So he's not on my Christmas card list. I can tell you that for nothing. Mm. But it's his right. It's his right to put up a flag, you know. And I think everybody has that right. What you don't have is the right to go around sticking your flag in other people's faces. And so that's, you know, and it's a shame that it's coming to this because as citizens of the UK, we're in a very unique position that we all of us have two flags. We have the flag of our country, the Union Jack, but we also have the flag of our birth nation. In my case, that's the flag of St George. But I have friends who are UK citizens who were born elsewhere, Pakistan, the Caribbean, and their other flag that they're allowed is not the flag of St George. Do they have a right to put their flag up as well? They're citizens, they're taxpayers, they live in the community. Can they put their flag up too?
Yeah, and presumably the organisers hope to back Keir Starmer into a corner, forcing him to denounce the flag lovers and therefore paint him as a traitor to his country. But he didn't, though, did he? He said he often flies the flag in Downing Street. He said he didn't have a problem with it. So, I mean, whatever you think about Keir Starmer, he does know what's going on here, but he didn't rise to the bait. It's as though he's finally started to get the political game that he's in.
I hope so, because I've tried very hard in our discussion not to accuse the widow flaggers of being racist. I don't know exactly what their impulses is. I'm just going by what they've written on their GoFundMe page. But you know, you've got to. I just wish that people would take a little bit more care about it and do it in a way that is not able to be ambiguous and people have doubts about it, because people are proud of the flag, and you know, I'm. You know, I've worn an England shirt into town when the football's on. I'm proud of it. But you'd have to be absolutely sure about what's behind it so that no one can look at it and think, you know, these people are trying to enforce a particular identity on everybody else that might not be shared by everybody in the community.
Yeah, on the plus side, though, if we swamped the kingdom in our national flags, that would dilute the effect that the far right may be going for. The patriotic thing would actually be to fly the flag everywhere and take it back from those who've hijacked it.
Yeah, I mean, I've over the years, I've often had this take back the flag discussion. It's, you know, I think it's the meaning of the flag we have to take back. You can have your flag wherever you want it, you know, help yourself. But it's the meaning of it. What can we make it mean? And I've always felt Englishness is a pretty intangible concept. But if it means anything, it means everything that goes on in the space, what we call England. So that Englishness becomes about where you are rather than where your grandparents are from. And that's the kind of, that's what I want our flag to symbolise. I want it to symbolise that. I don't want it to symbolise a narrow definition of Englishness where everybody has to conform to a particular historical narrative that is exclusive rather than being inclusive. England is an amazing place. It's one of the most multicultural places in Europe. And I'm proud of it whenever I look. You know, if you want to see a reflection of what it's like, look at any of our sporting teams, our national sporting teams. We're a multicultural nation. I'm very proud of that. And it's what makes me feel patriotic. And that's what I want our flag to symbolise. And in order to do that, we who feel that way have to continually make this case and make the case for a sense of belonging that's open to everybody. And I don't think what's going on in Withall is putting that message across.
Very good to talk to you, Billy. Thanks so much for that. That's Billy Bragg, singer, songwriter, musician, anti-racism campaigner. So what do you reckon? You've seen these pictures of flags going up all over the place. Do you find it heartening or disconcerting? 0345 6060 973 Nick Abbott, LBC.
This is LBC.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair, and if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This touchscreen is bigger, easy to use, and the image sharper. Nice. Let's check out the Bowers & Wilkins sound system.
Whoa!
Interior is beautiful with this navy herringbone weave. I like it. And reverse up, switch off, and plug in.
Sir, after a test drive, we usually return to the forecourt.
Of course, I was just checking how good it looks on my driveway. Sorry.
Save £4,750 with 3.9% APR representative finance on the refreshed Volvo XC60 plug-in hybrid. Visit your local Volvo retailer for a test drive.
Personal contract purchase. Finance provided by Volvo Car Financial Services UK Limited. Subject to availability. Terms apply.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what Asani should sound like. Go all crispin with Walkers. Delicious.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, we're talking about flag lovers. There's a lot of them about. Lewis Nielsen, the anti-fascist officer at Stand Up to Racism, said, "We are concerned that the discussion about the English flag and patriotism is giving cover for racism driven by the far right, and shamefully by politicians of all shades," he said. Well, it's all shades of blue, really, isn't it? Let's be honest. He says, "We do feel the movement is quite dangerous and comes at a tipping point where the far right is trying to build." Yeah, it is a cute game, isn't it? I don't know what these the people that we were talking about at the head of the conversation with Billy, the Withall flaggers, don't know anything about them at all. That's just a small part of this issue, but you know, overall, I do get the feeling that people are just playing a cute game. They're putting up something that they know is controversial, has connotations, and it's a bit annoying, really, that our flag is now controversial under some circumstances. It's undeniably so. So they know what they're doing. They're just after a response. And if the response is negative, then their well-practiced reply will be, "Oh, well, you don't love our flag, you don't love our country." 0345-6060-973. Merthyr Tydfil. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, Nick. How are you getting on, boy?
Good.
All right?
Yes, good, thanks.
Right. Interesting question, isn't it, flags? I've always felt in my life that when you raise a flag or wave a flag about, you're making a political statement in some respects. And with I'm looking at the situation that's being created by the right in England at the moment, is that you've got the Cross of St. George and you have the Union flag being paraded at the same time alongside each other.
Yeah.
Now, that raises immediate questions. you know, I come from this neck of the woods. We've got a flag. We've got a different one. We have the flag of Wales in Scotland. They've got the Saltire.
Yeah.
So there is a certain element of bewilderment here.
Can you not be proud of Wales and the Union?
Well, the thing is Wales a country? Is Scotland a country? We are part of a union of countries. Now, that is forgotten. Now, Billy Bragg there, he used the term, it's the country, the union flag is the country's flag. And the country of my birth, he said, is the Cross of St. George.
Hmm.
Now, that's an interesting interpretation, isn't it? Because it raises the question, is England a country? Is Wales a country? And is Scotland a country?
Well, is that actually relevant to what we're talking about? I mean, if you see the Welsh flag... Hang on a minute. If you see the Welsh flag, do you think anything... Are there any negative connotations with that? There aren't, are there?
No, there's not.
Right. But the cross of St. George does have connotations other than that it depicts the flag of the country, because it has been used so very much by a certain type of person.
There's an added complication here, Nick, that we've forgotten about. Say England football or England rugby play before the game, their anthem is God Save the King. Now, it's associated with England. England hasn't got a national anthem, has it? But so when you sing God Save the King, you're also singing the anthem of the Union flag and the Cross of St. George.
Yeah, but it is specifically England, though, isn't it? I mean, if you look down the stanzas, there's this uncomfortable part about Scotland at the end there, but nobody references that anymore.
No, they wouldn't, would they? No. But you can see the problem. You can see the confusion. And this is given an opportunity for the extreme right to step in, use either flag, Union flag or the Cross of St. George, to further a political view.
So does it matter then who is flying? Does the meaning change dependent on who is flying it and when they're doing it?
Yes. Because if a person raises a flag, they are making a political statement, which is what I said right at the beginning.
Yeah. Okay, good to talk to you, Jeff. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Do you get the feeling that the Cross of St. George has been sort of taken from us? Because it is associated in some people's minds with... you know, white supremacism, the far right, and so on. They do... People who sort of cloak themselves in the flag have a certain suspect nature about them, don't they? Robert says, how very dare you, accusing our patriotic knuckle-dragging morons of being a drain? They have graduated as fully grown sewers. Jeff says, these flag wavers who are outraged by the rules being enforced will soon have the streets looking like areas of Northern Ireland. The marches through Britain's multicultural areas will follow soon. Yep, no doubt. You know, monetary terms, if people were actually trying to demonstrate their patriotism, then it probably would be better not to give councils a lot of expensive work to try to clean up the mess that they're making. Because if councils are obliged to take down these amateur flags that have been appended to, you know, street furniture and so on, if they have actually no choice, they can't leave them there because it's dangerous. You know, flags fluttering down on busy roads, that's obviously dangerous. So it's incumbent on councils to actually take them down. And so if these patriots are putting these flags up and then giving councils a lot of expensive work to try to clean up the mess after them, what's patriotic about that? Wouldn't they be better occupied cleaning up litter in their area? I mean, that would be more patriotic, wouldn't it? spending their time working in a charity shop, perhaps, might be a better way to show how patriotic they are. I mean, there's all sorts of things that you can do to show your patriotism, which wouldn't require the council spending precious worker hours trying to clean up the mess that you're making. Just a thought. Neil in Bristol says, I think all flags should be got rid of. They cause nothing but trouble and historically were used to claim land captured by one country from another. Even on the moon, if you remember. Yeah, the moon. I'm not sure they claimed the land on the moon. But it is probably still there. It doesn't make it America's just because they've stuck a flag in it. But maybe the opposite way would be a better idea. I mean, they're quite handsome flags. I mean, the design's pretty good, I think. I mean, you look at other countries' flags and there aren't many that are as attractive as the Union flag. And the cross of St. George is, quite a basic design, but it's pleasing to the eye. Maybe if we just covered the country in flags, professionally placed, that would lift the soul, perhaps, because you get that sort of you get a feeling of wellness, of a sort of good feeling during sporting events when you see a lot of people putting flags up. So if we just did it all the time, it might make us feel better about the place, and it might make the place look better, and take the flag back from those who are using it for their own malign ends. 0345 6060 973. It's 11:30 on LBC, the news headlines with Daryl Jackson.
Israel says it will call up 60,000 reservists as it prepares to begin an expanded military operation in Gaza City. The country's defence ministers approved plans to begin a new phase of operations. A man who stabbed a neighbour and shot an officer with a crossbow has been jailed for 9 years. 55-year-old Jason King was shot by police when he refused to put the weapon down in High Wycombe in May last year. And two people are being questioned after an ice cream seller was killed near Wembley Stadium. The victim, who's been named as 38-year-old Shahzad Khan, was stabbed yesterday evening. LBC weather, low cloud across much of Scotland and northern and eastern England tomorrow. Some sunny spells developing later in the day, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
There now follows a message from the Prime Minister.
Some of you may know, my husband is being held hostage. They are targeting me. They have weaponized my family. I will not be threatened. My loyalties are to this country. I will not allow it to be held to ransom. And anyone who thinks that I would has badly underestimated me.
Hostage, starring Saran Jones. Coming soon only on Netflix.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week, subject to fair usage. For all T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yeah, we're talking about the proliferation of flags all of a sudden. There is a group called the Withal Flaggers, about whom I know not much, other than they have a GoFundMe page, and by Tuesday afternoon were reported to have raised more than £2,000, mostly in small donations of £5 and £10, for the purpose of festooning the place with flags in order to express their patriotism, presumably. Now, councils have been traipsing after them, taking them down, because it is their duty to do so. Health and Safety gone mad, that is. Tower Hamlets Council said, while we recognise people wish to express their views, we have a responsibility to monitor and maintain council infrastructure. Where flags are attached to council-owned infrastructure without permission, they may be removed as part of routine maintenance. And so, you know, some people might get a double hit from this. They'll put the flag up with all the meaning that it has, the various meanings that it has, and then they'll be able to complain that the unpatriotic council, who don't love their country, are busy taking down the flag of the nation. So it's like, you know, they win on they win if the coin comes up heads and if it comes up tails. 0345 6060 973. Bath. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Nick. You okay?
Yes, good, thanks.
This whole issue is incredibly bizarre to me. I mean, these people essentially have an oppression fetish, like wanting to create problems where there are none. Mm. And for me, I mean, you said earlier, you know, you asked earlier, have we been robbed of the true meaning of the flag or what the flag means to all of us? And the answer is yes, I'm embarrassed to be affiliated with the flag, which is awful if you think about it. And
but only under certain circumstances, though, surely. I mean, let's say the World Cup was on and England was about to get knocked out of the quarterfinals, as usual. You know, the people would be flying the Cross of St. George all over the place, and you'd feel quite uplifted by that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you were talking to Jeff earlier, because he's right. When I was thinking, when you were talking to him, I was thinking the Scottish flag and the Welsh flag don't have those same connotations as St. George's flag does. Mm. But what I fundamentally believe is where you are from is a piece of trivia. Where you live, where you contribute to society, that's where the true patriotism lies.
Right.
And in what a country needs is complex. And I think the people that focus all of their energy on flag waving don't actually care about the complexities of what a country needs and the things that a country needs to be better. Because like you said, otherwise they would be picking litter, volunteering for charities. But it's a lot easier to just get behind a symbol, a piece of fabric, and make that your entire personality and call that patriotism than do what an actual patriot would do. And, you know, it's not exclusive to the UK. I'm sure plenty of Americans put the flag of Canada on their backpack when they go travelling. You know, it's...
Well, these days, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, those are just my thoughts on the matter.
All right, good to talk to you, Laura. Thanks for that. This message says, the current favourite word of the protesters at various hotels is that they are patriots. I have no problem with veterans who have served the nation using this term, but everyone seems to be at it. Yeah, the two topics that we had in this hour and in the last hour are connected, of course. Fraser in Bathgate says, the Union Jack symbolises the subjugation of all the nations in the United Kingdoms. England has sacrificed its identity for a colonial enterprise which benefits an elite whose interests are only the lining of their own pockets and their own personal power and influence. Blimey, that's a bit deep. East Yorkshire. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Nick. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Flags are a tribal symbol. Humans are an incredibly tribal species, like lions and wolves are tribal. Leopards and bears aren't. They're solitary. But humans are the most tribal species on the planet.
Ants?
Flags define tribes. And the idea is that all one tribe, the whole tribe, gets behind the flag. Mm. The problem comes when you've got a sub-tribe, like the National Front and its derivatives, suddenly claim the tribal flag, which had been in decline a little bit before they really got into it. Mm-hmm. Then you don't know which tribe's which. Are you the sub-tribe or are you the major tribe?
Yes.
Look at football supporters. Mm. What is more tribal? They wear hats, scarves, shirts to define which tribe they're in.
Yeah.
The National Front have confused this. And people like Farage are great to jump on top of this. Look at what happened at going back to your last hour, the Bell Hotel, Epping Forest. They've been rounding up the Epping Forest tribe to say that these others are not part of our tribe. We don't want them in here. They're not our tribe. And tribalism drives massive amounts of human behaviour. And it can be manipulated so easily. Politicians have done it for years. You get an identifiable minority
that say they're not our tribe, we're our tribe. And Farage even does it with his flat-hatted tank and his cigarette. I'm part of your tribe. Our tribe, we're the ones of us that go to the pub, the real English people. Mm. Yeah, we're part of a tribe. It's a horrible way of manipulating people who don't understand evolutionary psychology and tribalism.
And the crux of it is, though, we, particularly in England, seem to have given our flag away, or mutely allowed it to be taken from us. Because if people associate the Cross of St. George with the far right, I mean, you know, they can parade around with it as much as they like, but there's more of us than there are of them. So I guess it's our fault.
In a way, I guess the smart reaction straight away would have been to put a little union flag in the corner and say, "These we are the non-tribal, the non-racist, the non-far-right. We've got a little union flag in the corner of ours." And then, so you don't, you, if you just simply use the Cross of St. George, you're the racist. Define yourself, make yourself different. Might have worked. But the other thing is, now it's difficult to know what to do, Nick, because people who want to take the St. George's flag down, they get condemned. But all they're really saying is, we don't want to be associated with racist far right. It's very difficult to stitch it together again now.
Yes, there is that. There is the people don't want to be associated with who they think now the flag belongs to. But there's also the quite reasonable attitude from the councils that we can't have all of this material flapping about because, you know, inexpert people have put it up, so it's bound to come down in short time. And we can't just have giant sheets of fabric blowing around the road.
No, and after they've been up a week, they're filthy and mucky and don't look nice. But just one quick other point. When the nation is playing cricket, football, rugby, whatever, everyone who uses the St. George's flag is the unified tribe supporting the country. And it feels great. There's nothing wrong with that at all. It's when a sub-tribe starts to use it for their own ends, that's the problem.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, thanks, Mike. 0345 6060 973. Dave in Derby says, do you remember during Euro 96 when everybody had car flags attached to their car windows? Was that racist? I don't think so. No, I don't think so either, for the reasons that we've just been explaining. And it happens with every major football tournament. You know, people with those flags that attach to your car window fluttering about. I mean, it's heartening. So it is very much about context. And I just get the feeling that people are behind this now. They're just sort of slyly picking a fight. And they can win on both ways. They win if the flags stay up, and they also win because they'll be able to demonstrate their whining grievance if the flags are taken down. So it's like heads they win, tails they win. Paul says, regarding flags, whisper it, but St. George wasn't born in England, but is believed to be Turkish and likely to have been raised in Palestine. Should this be more widely known? I wonder how the hotel flag-waving mob might react. 0345 6060 973. Ealing. Hello, Grace.
Hi. The last two callers made a lot of points that I've been thinking about already. It seems like a kind of want of a victimhood narrative, and also tribalism. So much tribalism. And it's quite primitive in a way.
Yeah. Well, it's good to feel part of a tribe. Just like as a kid, it's good to be part of a gang.
Yeah, and I think also it's about wanting to feel that one is on the side of something that's good, whereas other people are somehow bad. And with this current situation, it's very much, well, we're good people because we're white British people and those people are bad people. And we put off dealing with our own problems, flaws, by pointing at others and saying we don't like them and we're somehow superior. And I just think to myself, look at the idiotic behaviour of some of the people who've been outside hotels. Clearly, white British people like us are not superior in any way. But, yeah, I mean, you, as you've said several times, it's St. George's Cross. And there's various mythology around St. George and exactly how that came about. But it, it is a cross because of the Christian heritage. And we believe as Christians in the cross being where Jesus died for all the stuff we've done wrong. We've all sinned, and Jesus died on a cross nowhere near Britain because of the things we've done wrong. So personally, talking about how different people have different understandings of the symbolism, I just find it ironic, because it seems ironic to me that you would take this torture device on which Jesus died for what we've done wrong and say, I'm so proud. Aren't I great being British? I find that weirdly ironic. Obviously, there's also an awful lot we ought to think about regarding how flags have been used in colonialism, which we don't give enough thought to, frankly. We don't give enough thought to the fact that though there is some great stuff in our history, there's also a lot of stuff in our history that has contributed to the mess around the world that people are fleeing. And for people to think that they're somehow going to make their country better by waving a bit of fabric is quite beyond me.
Yeah, I mean, all countries have negative and horrific chapters in their past, but we, more than most, just because we used to rule so very much of it.
Yeah, and it seems odd to me that people would get very offended by anyone saying that. Again, it's kind of like wanting to feel somehow that we're morally superior, and actually, let's just talk about the realities of history and the truths of history. And the fact is that we, as British people, even though there's a cost of living crisis and what have you, we do have a higher standard of living than most of humanity, in no small part because of wealth extraction from other parts of the world, which is still ongoing. It didn't end with the British Empire ending. There's still far more wealth coming to the developed world than we give to the developing world in aid. We're still sucking resources out of these other countries, and then we want to pretend that we should just be able to shut ourselves off and keep out people who are fleeing difficulties.
Yeah, and the families that benefited from some of the worst chapters in British history are still doing so now. They're still running the country just as they did then. It's just they're doing so more quietly and politely. Good to talk to you, Grace. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Oliver says, imagine being the kind of person whose identity is wrapped up in the collaboration of colour and shapes on a piece of fabric. Then imagine seeing it raised high up a pole and waving in the breeze. What a great sense of pride and success one must feel. Melts the loss of them. Didn't see that last one coming. Melts. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
It is to the events in Epping that we turn. The High Court judgment that sees 28 days given in order to remove the people in the asylum hotel because the High Court say it can no longer be used for that purpose. Is this a ruling that you celebrate? Kay Marsh, Community Engagement and Migrant Support Coordinator at the Samfire Project.
Well, it's worrying, isn't it? I mean, if not hotels, then where?
Rudy's in Bristol.
They should be detained, especially if they've got no identification. They are criminals because they've entered the country illegally.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Tom Swarbrick. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
At SSE Energy Solutions, we know businesses are full of different kinds of energy.
Like your fourth coffee of the morning energy.
Your yes, chef energy. And even as per my last email energy. You can bring any energy you like to your business, but at SSE Energy Solutions, we bring simple, affordable energy. Choose SSE Energy Solutions, a different kind of energy.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Hey, Harry.
Hello, mate.
Got any tips for the football?
Your best bet is to head over to BetVictor. They're giving new customers a terrific welcome offer. If you bet a minimum of £10, they'll give you £30 in free bets.
Oh, that's a stale of a deal.
It's a good darn deal that'll make you squeal for real. Neil?
My name's not Neil.
I know, but it rhymes.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on the football at BetVictor.
18 plus, opt in and bet on any football marketing at odds of evens or greater. No cash out, 7-day expiry. Terms and conditions apply at gamblerware.org.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddie.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Leading Britain's conversation, Nick Abbott. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Yes, we're talking about the preponderance of flags, which has seemed to have come from nowhere and are now decorating street furniture all over the place. Birmingham is the sort of the epicentre. It's gathered pace in Birmingham and elsewhere, says The Guardian, attracted controversy and media attention after the city council said that it would remove banners and flags from lampposts as part of a plan to upgrade to LED lighting. Which is fair enough, you know. If you're going to, you can't have electrical work going on around a fluttering flag. The council said it has no policy of removing flags, saying it proudly flew the union flag outside the council house every day. But when it comes to items attached to lampposts, it's normal council procedure for these to be removed on a regular basis, as has always been the case. People are free to fly or hang flags from their homes or gardens, but we ask that they're not attached to street furniture, which is, to mix a metaphor, a red rag to a bull to these people, because, as I said before, they'll put them up deliberately now in places that they know they're going to be taken down, and then they can make cute little TikTok videos of council staff taking their patriotic flags down and claim that the council doesn't love their country. Cute, no? Brighton. Hello, John.
Hello, yeah. I think clearly people have got a problem with these flags being flown that are anti-British, anti-English. What's the problem with flying these flags? There's no problem with it, is it? People are reading their own agenda, like racist agenda or this agenda or that agenda. It's all a complete load of nonsense, isn't it?
Well, it depends on whether it is or not.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, people, you don't know why people are flying the flags. So I don't think you should read in some negative thing. It's just the national flag, isn't it?
Well, John, by extension, you don't know why they're doing it, so you shouldn't read anything into it either.
Yeah, well, yeah, but it's clearly very relevant to the migrant hotel chaos.
Exactly.
Exactly, because it's you got a migrant invasion. government in chaos, in a massive cover-up, escalating costs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, where are we going to be in 10 years' time, mate?
Here.
It's going to be quite chaos.
Okay, if that's your prediction, John, we'll check back with you in 10 years, see how we're doing. Paul in Tulsa, Oklahoma says, I am always amused by the fact that here in the US, some who revere the flag beyond imagination and pour scorn on anyone who decries it in any way are the same people who sometimes embarrassingly wear swimwear made of desecrated, chopped-up US flags. Yes. Yeah. Well, same here. Same here with people who wear, for instance, Union Jack socks. Our flag on their feet. How offensive is that? And yet they claim to be patriots. I don't think so. Ipswich. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Nick. I can't think who you're talking about with the Union Jack socks.
Just an example.
Just an example. The previous caller. Well, that was quite something. Anyway, just to say, I'm not sort of like lily-livered or anything. I'm quite a strong, confident, you know, woman, everything. But, and I love football, absolutely love football. But I find the St. George's Cross very intimidating. I was saying to your producer, for example, if you go about an area, say I was driving through an area recently and you're looking at pubs about. Now, if I see a pub with the St. George's Cross, I wouldn't go in there. You can call me. I'm sure that the caller before would call me a million things. But I wouldn't go in there. It wouldn't be the sort of place I'd want to go into because I'm making a judgment call. And I know he said that you can't judge everybody the same. You can't. But I just know the sorts of experiences I've had with people that are very pro behind that flag. And it's sad because it is the flag of this country.
Yeah, it is sad. But would it depend on the context? I mean, you mentioned football. Say there was an international tournament going on and England were doing unexpectedly well. Then if a pub festooned itself with not massive window-sized flags, but little pennants fluttering in the breeze, would that not be heartening?
Exactly. Exactly. And this is where I have this debate in my brain all the time. You're so right, and don't laugh. But the dogs even wear their St. George's bandanas. Completely. I absolutely get what you're saying.
Which
if you
dogs?
See, if you see my dogs.
Oh, your dogs.
Sorry. Don't you remember that from your abnormal normal shows?
I don't listen to my shows.
No, you never listen to your shows. But that's what I'm saying. I'd put the England flag on them then, but you would never. Not at all, because if I saw a dog any other time or saw it hanging, or because there is a house locally that other than, you know, there's a few houses that will fly it on St. George's Day.
Mm.
But there are a couple that fly it all the time. And I hate the way that I am making judgments sometimes.
Now,
that's really bad of me.
Is it different, this Cross of St. George and the Union flag?
Yeah, I love the Union flag.
Right.
I absolutely love the Union flag. And I will fly the Union flag. Not got a problem at all. I find it really heartening, the Union flag. Mm. And this is why I say I have this debate constantly with myself. I'm going over it the whole time. But I think you'll find all these people, including Farage, they're not saying anything, they're just asking questions.
Thanks, Emma. 0345 6060 973. I used to live in a place where I could see from my windows a building with a big flagpole on top, and it was a block of flats, and the people at the top in the penthouse had on their terrace had a huge flagpole which was empty. I mean, I stayed there for about 10 years. And it was empty for years and years and years. And then one day I woke up and the Union flag, a big one, was fluttering. They'd put it up right on the top of that flagpole. And it made me so happy. I practically levitated. I almost wrote them a letter of congratulation. But, you know, being British, I didn't want to draw attention to myself. But it's a marvellous thing in the right context. It's annoying that we have to even add that on the end. In the right context, isn't it? San Francisco. Hello, Sophia.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for taking my call. There's nothing wrong with the flag. It's a beautiful flag, as always. However, I think a lot of these people are just, they're waving all this flag, waving to feel good, but it doesn't solve any problem. A lot of them are just basically, exploiting the flag, and they try to deflect from real problems, and sometimes it has a hint of fascism, because the fascists, they're always waving the flag and waving the flag, but they offer no solutions.
In America, sorry to interrupt, but it is quite different, because you go through towns, particularly in the middle of America, and every house will have an American flag, the Stars and Stripes on it. But it doesn't mean that they're Republican. It doesn't mean that they're Democrat. It just means that the flag is for everyone. It doesn't have the same kind of, depending on circumstance, that we have with our flag, which doesn't really reflect well on this country, because it seems that to some extent we've given our flag to a very small subset of our people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're right there. And interesting also, I think it's, I would like to also say, and you made a good point earlier, that a lot of these individuals are people from, the asylum seekers are from countries that were once part of the British common empire, and that their resources were looted, and so they're now fleeing to here. It's like a blowback. And so you can't, as I always say, you can't, run away from the consequences of your actions.
Well, that's right. As much as we try to, it's going to cling to us like a bad smell. All right, thanks, Sophia. I'll see if I can squeeze one more in. James, hello.
Hello, Nick. Just a couple of points. I was going to bring up an anecdote of walking around Milan last year and looking up in the Galleria, and I see this flag that looks exactly the same as the St. George's flag, and it is indeed the same flag for the city of Milan. So I was just sort of thinking that, you know, this isn't a unique symbol like the far right, you know, like to claim for themselves. It is a flag that's used in other areas as well.
Right.
And secondly, just a quick point, you know, in the Britpop era, we're very good at sort of pushing the flag into the mainstream, thinking of Jerry Halliwell in her dress.
Yes.
And I think we do need to do some reclaiming of our flags.
Right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Thanks, James. Appreciate all your messages on that. Sorry I couldn't get around to them, but no doubt there'll be more opportunities to talk about this on LBC soon. Going to break for the news. Coming up, Tina Turner, Frank Sinatra, Westlife are among the top 10 artists who have been picked for their songs to be played for the final goodbye at funerals in this year's Co-op Funeral Music Charts. We'll be going through the list and speaking to a psychotherapist to ask if you can find joy in planning your own funeral and why people choose the songs that they do. Somewhere Over the Rainbow, We'll Meet Again. Have you thought about what you'd like to be sent off to? Midnight. The news headlines coming with Daryl Jackson.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, Israel says it will call up 60,000 reservists as it prepares to begin an expanded military operation in Gaza City. The country's defence ministers approved plans to begin a new phase of operations. The Net Nusbacher, a war historian and former British Army intelligence officer, told LBC News Israel is hoping to intimidate Hamas.
The Israelis are doing this to scare Hamas into imagining themselves, you know, back down in the tunnel, getting rooted out one by one. And maybe they can save their lives if they agree to go into exile. I don't think they will.
The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, called for Tory-run councils to start legal challenges over asylum hotels. Labour's dismissed that as desperate, hypocritical nonsense. It follows a decision by the High Court to grant an interim injunction against the Bell Hotel in Epping, housing asylum seekers. Local journalist and founder of Everything Epping Forest, David Jackman, has told LBC how the local community is feeling.
Delighted at the moment that the protests and the community effort has resulted and contributed towards the fact that this injunction has been given. As I say, yeah, they should be wary that this is still only half time in the battle. And until we get a final decision on the application for a permanent injunction, is when they could probably really celebrate and see the hotel closed for good.
A man who stabbed a neighbour and shot an officer with a crossbow has been jailed for 9 years. 55-year-old Jason King was shot by police when he refused to put the weapon down in High Wycombe in May last year. He previously pleaded guilty to a number of offences. PC Curtis Foster has now recovered from his injuries, but still remembers the day last year.
I didn't know immediately it was a serious injury. I knew something had impacted me, but my adrenaline was so high that the pain wasn't really there. I kind of first realised I was bleeding quite a lot when I could feel it running down my leg.
Two people are being questioned after an ice cream seller was killed near Wembley Stadium. The victim, who's been named as 38-year-old Shahzad Khan, was stabbed yesterday evening. And as the head of London's Met Police has defended their decision to use live facial recognition cameras at Notting Hill Carnival this weekend, Sir Mark Rowley says it's significantly improved and will be used without bias. But the Equalities Watchdog says the policy is unlawful. LBC weather. Low cloud across much of Scotland and northern and eastern England today. Some sunny spells developing later in the day. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Abbott.
Choosing a funeral song is an important way to personalise a funeral service, says Co-op Funeral Care. They say it's a chance to pay tribute to your loved one's personality and interests, and have released top 10 lists of the most popular songs that people who have used their services have asked for at their funeral service. Let's talk about this with Lucy Beresford. Lucy is a psychotherapist and broadcaster. Hello, Lucy.
Hello, Nick.
So people are getting involved in planning their own ceremony after their death. Is that an odd thing for someone to do?
No, I think it's been the practice for quite some time now. We are very creatures of habit, and we have our favourite songs, and we have our favourite stories, readings perhaps. And the idea that you might know that your death is coming is something that is quietly terrifying for most of us. And one of the ways in which we can soften it is to think, okay, well, maybe I should prepare what that event will be like. Maybe I can reflect on what choices I make. Now, of course, the irony is that you're not going to be around to hear any of this. So you don't know whether, even though you've chosen Frank Sinatra, let's say, your loved ones, who probably can't stand Frank Sinatra, actually change the choices after you've gone. But it gives you peace of mind at a time perhaps when a lot of things might feel out of your control, that you're in control of this one thing. You're not in control necessarily of when you leave this earth, but you can at least create the send-off that you feel is what you would love to hear if you were actually there to hear it.
You don't think that there's a danger that people might be obsessing about their own demise?
Well, no, quite the opposite, actually, because I think one of the things that this funeral company are probably highlighting is that people don't talk about death. You know, particularly, I'd say, in the last 100 years, with medical advancements, you could get to the age of maybe 50, certainly 40, without having been to the funeral of somebody very close to you. We're much more remote and detached from death than we ever were for centuries before, when death was a much more commonplace thing, and you might have experienced it a lot in childhood because not many of your siblings survived. So fast forward to the 21st century, and people don't like to talk about death. There is such a thing as death anxiety, which is this sort of back of the brain thing that haunts us, certainly the older we get, which is we don't know when we're going to die. We just know we are going to die. So a lot of people put it off. They don't make a will. They don't make pension provisions. Or they don't make provisions for what will happen to their pension in the effect of their death. And a lot of families are left with a big question mark as to what would our loved one have wanted. There is this big idea that if we knew what hymn they wanted, if we knew what favourite piece of music they liked, it would give us, the living, that chance to sort of grieve properly. So I think what the funeral company is really highlighting is try and have those conversations now, and have them in a really gentle way, choosing music. It's not very threatening to talk about your favourite songs or to talk about your favourite piece of music. And it kind of gently leads you into the topic of something that can be really delicate.
Yeah, it's odd though, isn't it? Because you're planning for something that you're not going to really be, well, you're the star of the show, essentially, but you're not going to be there. So a funeral, really, is for the people who are left behind. So shouldn't they be the ones to actually choose the nature of the ceremony? Because it's really for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm afraid I have to agree with that, apart from the fact that I probably also would have in mind exactly how I would like my funeral to go and what gets played and who does the readings. But you're absolutely right. Funeral rituals have been created firstly by religions, and now arguably by people who have no faith at all in society in general, in order to process grief, in order to allow us to mark the passage of time that has been highlighted by somebody dying, usually someone very close to us. And it's often a society-sanctioned way for some people to cry. People who feel that they can't cry in other settings, there's almost permission that's given to us by saying, oh, well, it's a funeral, so you can grieve at this. You can express your emotion freely, and we're not going to judge you for that. And as a result, yes, you're left behind. So you would think, well, maybe I get to choose the music that reminds me of my mother or reminds me of my brother. I get to choose the reading that perhaps they read to me when I was a small child, because I'm the one that's going to have to go through this funeral, not the person who's sitting in the, lying in the wicker basket or the coffin or whatever, or being interred in the earth. So you're absolutely right. It's kind of topsy-turvy. But as a process in order to talk to some people about death, about the fact that death is perhaps more imminent than they might want to think, this is the perfect solution. This is the perfect kind of soft landing to get people to think, even if you don't follow through on the wishes, and will they ever know? I'm not quite sure. If there's life after death, they might, but that's a whole other topic. Mm-hmm. If you choose your favourite, you know, Duran Duran song, maybe that allows you to feel like I've put all my affairs in order, including my funeral, and now I can leave this earth in peace.
But it's a funny way of doing it, though, isn't it? Because when you're alive and you're choosing your own funeral, I mean, you may be in jolly good humour, and you might choose a song like, well, apparently one of the top songs to be chosen is the Zed Cars theme tune. Those of a certain age will remember that. Or the Match of the Day theme tune. Now, that's not going to elicit tears, is it? I mean, it will strike something of a discordant note. People will be sitting there probably aghast, I would imagine, because they're feeling upset, and yet here's this comedy tune ringing through the church.
But if that really reflects their personality, and I'm sort of thinking now of the sort of very famous Test Match Special music for cricket. You know, if you were an absolute cricket fan, maybe you captained your local team. And as soon as that got played, everybody in the church, let's say it's a Christian service, everyone would burst out laughing, and they would just think, oh, that is so them. Similarly, if they were a rugby fan, or if they had a favourite pop band and you'd spent your whole life devoted to, I don't know, Duran Duran, Kylie Minogue, whoever it is. Speaking personally, I think the people who are left behind would just think, well, that is just so funny because that is very Lucy, or that is very Nick. And again, that's what you need, really. You need something that connects you and allows you to have that outpouring of emotion, whether it's tears or whether it's laughter, because Freud would say, you know, those two things are very closely aligned. Anything that allows you to access that emotion and process it, I think, is a really good thing. But for sure, there is something weird about the fact that you might never get to hear that this unless they put on a funeral service for you before you go.
Is that a thing?
I gather that in some hospices that can happen, yes. That there is almost a sense of, and again, you know, death is a very intriguing thing. It's a great leveler because we are all going to die, and some people find that terrifying, and anything that helps you kind of anchor yourself and ground yourself is to be wished for. And some hospices say, okay, well, let's have a little gathering of your nearest and dearest, and they're going to read a few poems, and they're going to give you that send-off to minimize your anxiety. So, yes, I have heard of that as a thing.
I think that would make me anxious. What do you make of some of the...
I will remember that, Nick.
Okay.
I will remember.
What do you think of some of the songs? They seem a bit obvious and cheesy. Simply the Best by Tina Turner is the number one. I mean, that's a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
I thought the number one was Time to Say Goodbye by Andrea Bocelli.
They released several lists. That's the overall number one. But in the pop list, Simply the Best by Tina Turner, Supermarket Flowers by Ed Sheeran. I'll admit I don't know what that is. But
I could not hum that if I was paid to do
it
that.
It doesn't sound like something that you would want at a funeral, Supermarket Flowers. Then there's...
Ed Sheeran. He's a nice person.
I'm sure he is. You Raise Me Up by Westlife. Dancing Queen by ABBA. Who would want that at their funeral?
Well, it's funny you should say that because, well, again, I think it's about what is the purpose of a funeral. And I think gone are the days when everybody wore black and it was incredibly somber. I went to the funeral 20 years ago of someone who was my age and therefore died prematurely, died well before her time. Black was banned and we were all expected or invited to wear our most colourful clothes. And the music reflected that as well. The music was upbeat. They didn't want a sad occasion. They wanted a celebration of their life. And I have often thought that Thank You for the Music is a really touching song because it, in a way, for me, it would speak about how the amazing people who'd been in my life and who'd made it so colourful and musical, if that makes sense. So I think having pop music simply reflects a shift in the, maybe the last decade or so that says, yeah, let's not make it so depressing. Let's make it uplifting. It's the end of a life, but it's also the celebration of one as well.
Yeah. Do you think celebrants are worth considering, or would people be best advised to keep it personal with those connected to the deceased talking about them?
There is definitely nothing worse than someone leading a service who clearly either didn't know the person who died or simply hasn't done their homework. It's actually really excruciating because the majority of people only attend funerals when they know someone and there's something really personal. And therefore, you're bursting with stories, really. And then suddenly this person who's leading the whole affair just doesn't really connect and can't really conjure up an essence of that person. So that I always think that that is slightly awkward. But, you know, some people just don't have they might not have someone in their life who's a very good orator or who is a very good storyteller. And they might worry that they're not going to be able to deliver anything. I mean, I've definitely, certainly when my dad died, I don't know how I got through the little poem that I had decided to read. I mean, it was just awful, everybody standing watching me in floods of tears. So it might have been better had someone been slightly more composed than I had. But nevertheless, everyone came up to me afterwards and said, well, that was just so lovely because you obviously, you know, you missed him and you wanted to reflect that. So I think, yeah, there can be a clinical side to it, which just a celebrant might not be able to capture the essence of the person.
Yeah.
It's so amazing how many different angles to this story there are. Mm. And I think it always has to go back to that personal quality, the person who's died and maybe the very close, tight group around them. I tell you one thing, though, if you organise your own funeral and choose songs and things like that, the one thing you might potentially avoid is the situation in sort of fractured families where one side wants to have Sarah Brightman and the other side wants to have, you know, the theme tune for Liverpool Football Club. Mm. And if you're the dead person and you had already decided that it were these songs, this hymn and this poem, it just saves a lot of arguments from the sides of the family that might have fallen out or been estranged.
Yeah, I mean, from my experience, I wouldn't necessarily recommend a celebrant. For my dad came in and really told us off for not telling her, for not having enough material to give her.
What?
And just gave us a dressing down, essentially. So I insisted that we use somebody else. And in another funeral, the celebrant did so little homework that she mispronounced the name of the recently deceased.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, that's awful.
But go on.
Sorry. No. Well, I was just going to say that could have been amusing, but it isn't. It's always going to be really painful, actually. Yeah.
But in closing, you don't get the feeling that somebody choosing their own funeral is akin to sending themselves a birthday card.
You say that like it's wrong, Nick. No, I think it definitely speaks to somebody who does want to be in control. And if you're in a situation where a lot of things are now out of your control, I personally wouldn't judge someone who wants to just retain a little bit of that sense of, could I just make sure that my ending is how I want it to be? Maybe there are elements of, you know, the death. And listen, you can plan your funeral in your 20s and 30s, but quite a lot of people give thought to it when they become unwell and death becomes a slightly more imminent prospect. And I just can't begrudge anybody who thinks to themselves, well, there's quite a lot now that I'm not in control of. So I am actually now going to make sure that everybody sings Vera Lynn, We'll Meet Again, whether they like it or not.
Very good to talk to you, Lucy. Thanks very much for your time. Lucy Beresford, psychotherapist and broadcaster. So are you making plans for the end? Or have you been in a funeral where somebody has done that? And what songs are you thinking of having played? I can tell you what the best or the most requested ones are. And apart from the ones that we mentioned, You Raised Me Up by Westlife, Angels, of course, Robbie Williams, and sports ones, quite a lot of those. Lucy mentioned, the most requested one is Time to Say Goodbye. I guess that's appropriate, isn't it? And Andrea Bocelli and Sarah Brightman. I'll come back with your thoughts on this. 0345 6060 973.
This is LBC.
Because you never know what little pickles they'll get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
At Lidl, we're making this bank holiday a savvy one. You can save £3 on 18 can packs of Stella Artois and Foster's. And £3 off bottles of Côte de Provence Monoli Rosé. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus while stocks last. Excludes Scotland. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Mr. Thing is enjoying a lovely summer's day. He's trimmed the hedge, he's cut the grass, and best of all, he's just had 25% snipped off his home care cover, meaning his boiler, electrics, plumbing and drains are now covered for less. Chop chop, sign up today. This offer ends soon. Search British Gas Home Care Cover. Watch out for that rake, Mr. Thing. Ouch! Too late. British Gas. Taking care of things. T's and C's apply. Offer not available to existing home care or boiler service contract customers. Ends 9th of September 2025.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yes, we're talking about planning your own funeral, what songs that you would like, and whether you've had a recent experience of going to somebody else's funeral and can tell us what that was like. Cheltenham, hello, Gilly.
Oh, she's written it with a G, hasn't she?
Oh, she has.
I can smack her. It's Gilly.
Gilly, sorry about yes. that.
It's not Gilly. I'm not a Gillian. I'm a Gilly.
Gilly.
Yes, first time I've spoken to you, and it's a bit scary, Nick, I have to tell you.
Welcome along, Gilly.
Thank you, my lovely. But it's something that that touches my heart when you're speaking about this, because funerals should be... I know I've been to so many funerals lately, because I'm getting very, very old, and they're so miserable. And I want people to be... Well, to have a bit of my personality at it. So what I'm going to do is, as I'm going to be, because I'm nearly 80, I'm going to record a CD with some of the poetry I love and some of it quite funny. And I don't know, I'd just like to leave them laughing, really.
But do you think that, because the people who love you are going to be there and they're going to be upset, obviously. Do you think that it would be... almost forcing them to change their mood? I mean, they might really, I don't know, this might sound a bit weird, but they might actually feel comforted by being miserable. Do you feel that you might be sort of forcing them into being jolly?
I'll never be able to force anyone to do anything, to be honest. But it will be, you know, that sort of wry laughter when you think, it's not me to make people feel miserable. So I will have some songs that will probably make let them cry, because I really love Dance Me to the End of Love by Leonard Cohen.
Oh, and, well, Leonard Cohen will upset him. That'll put a damper on the proceedings. Leonard Cohen.
I want them to be a bit sad.
Right.
And so, I love what Lucy said. I'd love to have my funeral whilst I'm still here without them. You know, I'd like to suddenly wake up and say, oh, thanks for saying all those nice things about me.
Well, it would be an extra special birthday. I hadn't actually heard of that, people having a pre-death funeral. But it seems a bit macabre.
You haven't heard of it. Does that mean you've just thought of it?
No, I hadn't thought. No, it was Lucy that brought it up.
I didn't hear because I was talking to Sarah.
Right, but it was. It's an interesting idea. I guess people could, praise you while you're still around to hear it.
Or perhaps you could just write to people and say, "Look, I'm thinking of dying. Is there anything nice you'd like to say?"
Yeah, that's a good idea. Nice to talk to you, Julie. Thanks for that. 0345 6060 973. Joe texts, I want karaoke roulette at my funeral. Everybody's name goes into a funeral-less. What's that? A funeral-less. That's a typo. Everyone goes into a hat. And random songs into... Oh, okay. So everyone's name goes into one hat and random songs go into another. And everybody has to sing the song they pick out. I'll haunt them. I'm gutted I won't be there, to be honest. And no one will ever speak to me again, but I won't care because I'll be dead. Well, I was going to say it's a good idea. I'm not too sure about that. I would be mortified if I was there, Joe. I'm planning to be elsewhere on that day, if that's okay. Plymouth, hello, Julie.
Hello, Nick. This is something I'm a bit of an expert in, sadly. I'm the youngest of eight. The first funeral, my brother passed when just before my 18th birthday. He was only 24. Very sudden, very shocking. And I can't remember what songs Daniel had at his funeral. I have no memory, but it was much easier from then on because we all loved music. I know my mum had, she used to sing at the in the piano lounge at the club, Working Men's Club, Are You Lonesome Tonight by Elvis, so we had that.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad was sort of Irish immigrant, and he, you know, we had Danny Boy or something for him. And then two brothers were in bands, so Here Comes the Sun from the Beatles and the Crystal Chandeliers, because they both sang those songs in their bands.
Right.
And my sister had the Tina Turner and Simply the Best. And my sister-in-law had the Westlife one. And we all started singing to it. We all just burst in song.
It's a bit odd playing songs at a funeral, in my experience, though, because you have a very short allotted time in, wherever it's taking place. Either in the church.
In the cremation,
and
yes.
So, in the few that I've been to, they have sort of played a bit of it, the first minute or so, and then they've cut it, which seems, I don't know, it seemed a bit off.
Yeah, the last one was my brother in 2020, and you have a song going in, and he had Santana, T.O., whatever, because he used to play that on his guitar.
Yeah.
And then we had his granddaughter chose a Sade, Paradise. And then we had his daughter chose a song by the Eagles. And then when the curtains closed, we had Here Comes the Sun. So that's four songs, but as you say, not the whole song.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my brother, who's still alive, he's a Jam fan, so he wants I'm Going Underground, which I think is quite appropriate.
That's a good one.
Even though I think he's getting cremated, and I'm thinking I might have one of the old favourites, Life of Brian, because I'm going to be the only person left. I'll have no one at my funeral.
Oh, you mean Always Look on the Bright Side of Life, that one?
Yes.
Right.
You'd sing that one, wouldn't you, Nick?
I would think that's a bit on the nose, isn't it? I'm kind of surprised that song isn't in this list, but it isn't. Because I would have thought that would get chosen, by more people than most. Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. But it's not here, so...
Too cheery, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. All right, good to talk to you, Julie. Thanks for that.
Thank you.
Ta-da. Daisy in Bath says, my dad wants to go My Way by Frank Sinatra, which is cool. I didn't inherit that gene, however. I really want to go to Rock This Party by Bob Sinclair, which is one I don't know. But My Way is the number two chosen song. I'll tell you what the list is after the news. Maybe give you an idea of what to select yourself if you are if you're having trouble thinking. Guildford, hello, Jonathan.
Oh, hi, man. Hang on, 1 second. Sorry, just took the old speaker.
Oh, yes.
Sadly, 2 weeks ago, my church friend, his wife died. So there's a ceremony tomorrow. And I was going to say, firstly, you probably know in like Brazil or Mexico, they kind of like blow trumpets and celebrate someone's death. You know, like, you know, they've had a good life.
Yeah, New Orleans, they do the same kind of thing.
Yeah, rather than being like all depressed and whatnot. Mm. But yeah, anyway, back to songs. I want to be buried in the woods, and that is feasible.
Is it?
Because I was... Yes, I was raised by wolves and foxes, and
is that a fact?
No comment. And I would choose either "This Is the End" by The Doors.
Wow, that's a very long song.
Yes, it might be a very long funeral. And then I would choose, I don't know if you're familiar with Alan Partridge, and he sings a bit, a comment of a song when he says the chorus, "I'm going to be 18 till I die."
I'm not familiar with that, no. but
okay, and then my third choice would just be the theme music to Rhubarb and Custard.
I think I can remember. Like, it's almost like the Laurel and Hardy march, isn't it?
Yeah, it's catchy.
It's catchy, but it's kind of a sickly sort of.
It's almost aggressive, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. Well, that would cause chuckles, yeah. No doubt. All right, thanks for that, Jonathan. Laura texts, heard the story that somebody had a David Brent impersonator at their funeral. And the mother of the deceased was so touched that it absolutely encapsulated her son. And Matt says, my dad died after refusing to discuss funeral arrangements or any financial planning, despite numerous pleas. What a pain it was sorting out that estate solo. I will admit to being a little frustrated when sorting things out for him. And in the end, the decisions led to seeing his cremation coffin service going to the music of Lieutenant Pigeon, Moldy Old Dough. Blimey. Mixed feelings in hindsight. He should have given me some suggestions if he cared that much. Blaming him, I see. What are your thoughts on this? 0345 6060 973. I'll Alan Freeman's... Well, not quite. I haven't got the sound of the swinging cymbals, but I'll do Alan Freeman style countdown for you after the news. I'll tell you what the most popular songs are. That is according to the Co-op Funeral Service. It's just past 12:30 on LBC. The news headlines with Daryl Jackson.
The Israeli military has entered the first stages of its planned assault on Gaza City. A spokesperson says the IDF already has a hold on the outskirts after Israel's defense minister previously approved the plan to occupy the city. A man who shot an officer with a crossbow after stabbing his neighbour in a long-standing dispute has been jailed for 9 years. 55-year-old Jason King was eventually shot in the stomach by police in High Wycombe after refusing to put down the weapon. And the UK and Russia have issued each other with sanctions. British officials are targeting financial groups with asset freezes, while Moscow has accused journalists of spreading anti-Russian stories. LBC weather, low cloud across much of Scotland and northern and eastern England later. Some sunny spells developing later, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Save this bank holiday with Lidl. Bring the heat with 2 for £7 on barbecue meats like burgers, jumbo sausages and more holiday heroes. Only with Lidl Plus. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this bank holiday.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from, too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Abbott on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Yeah, we're talking about funerals and whether you have chosen the kind of ceremony that you want for yourself or whether you've been to a funeral that that happened like that. Pauline says, my mother requested always look on the bright side of life, but it was refused by the church because of the context of the song. Oh, in the right, Life of Brian. They felt it might be a Mickey take of the church. Well, that's a bit much, isn't it? I mean, you can't have your last request because the church deems it that you know, unsatisfactory to their you know, to their mores. Northwood, hello, Sandy.
Hello, Nick. I'm so happy to speak to you,
Sandy.
Hello, and I wanted to call because I've actually had this conversation with my friend this very evening.
Oh, yes.
We both have decided that we, and this might make us sound like control freaks, but we both want to sort out our own service sheets. I'd like to write my own eulogy. And one of the reasons is because I've got one son, and it's such a stressful time, as I'm sure you know, when you lose someone. And whilst you want to do your very best for them, at least if he doesn't choose to use all that I write, it'll give him an idea and a real flavour of what I'm hoping for as his mum and whoever else is left. I also don't want any dodgy photos put on my service sheet, so I want to choose my own glamorous one.
Well, that's very wise, yes.
Yes.
But writing a eulogy to yourself...
About myself.
About yourself, yeah, sorry.
About myself.
Right.
I have done a few. I've done my mum's friends, and I've even been asked to write one on behalf of somebody else. And it's such an important thing. I love writing. I love creative writing. And I would just like to say what I would like to convey to people. I'd like to put messages in it to people if they're still there. And as I say, even at my age, I lost my husband 8 years ago. And the songs I chose for him were of our time as teenagers. I had Buddy Holly's True Love Ways, Roy Orbison in Dreams, and I said to our vicar, I said, I want them as loud as you can get them. I don't want a tinkling little sound in the background.
Right.
And Nick, it was amazing.
Yeah? Well, that's good. That's actually, and the more you've been speaking, the more that actually sounds like a good idea to write your own eulogy, because you will get the things that you want in there, but it'll also remove the stress and the difficulty for whoever is going to be reading it to actually have to come up with something themselves.
That's right. That's right.
And you can, as you said, you can give messages to the people that will be there in the audience.
Yeah, assuming they're still there.
Well,
I mean, as a by the way, I've for the last 8 years since I lost my husband, I have been decluttering my house as much as possible. I just want here what I use, what I love, what I need. And when my husband died, he left so much. He loved cars and motorbikes, and he had parts and parts in the garage. And it was hard to get rid. And I've said to my son, don't be sentimental.
Right.
Just do it. And I just want to help him as much as I can.
Well, that's very wise. Thanks for that, Sandy. Let's go to Lancashire. Talk to Karen. Hello. Oh, Karen, it's a very, very bad line. Are we on speakerphone?
We are. I don't know how to talk it off.
You don't
know how to...
to
hear you, then.
Oh, no, that's it. You've just come in loud and clear. Go ahead.
Right, brilliant. I mean, you're my favourite, so I'm really glad to talk to you. Thanks,
Karen.
This is a really weird, I suppose you say, synchronicity, because I've just made my will, and I've been thinking of this very subject, what to have, you know, as a music. So I went through all my favourite modern songs, and, you know, well... And I thought it was, I want something funny because all my friends know me as having a good sense of humour. So at one point it was Norman Greenbaum and then
Spirits in the Sky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Blue Oyster Cult. I thought that
Don't Fear the Reaper. that's a good one.
I think I've decided, oh, by the way, my husband did have, the Monty Python one.
Yeah, always look on the bright side of life.
Yeah. And it was brilliant. And he chose he chose the Queen one to go in, The Show Must Go On.
Oh, yeah.
But for myself... I've decided I want Ding Dong the Witch is Dead. at the end, the curtains close,
yeah.
I want to have, you know, my memory's terrible at the moment. I want to have, bloody hell. Sorry, I swore.
That's all right.
Yeah, Ding Dong the Witch is Dead. Another one Bites the Dust.
Another one. Well, that sounds like your ceremony is going to be a hoot and a half, Karen.
Well, definitely. But there is one serious thing, the reading. There's one beautiful reading, and I believe a reverend of a church wrote it to comfort his congregation. And it starts off something like something about what is death. I have only slipped away into the next room. It's an absolutely gorgeous reading.
Well, that's a nice thought. I've only slipped away into the next room.
Yes, yeah.
Karen, it's a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for that. I've got to move on, but appreciate that. Stafford, hello, Rona.
Hello, Nick. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good.
Yeah, go ahead, Rona.
Oh, sorry. So, yes. So, I've just wanted to talk about these living funeral ideas or celebrations of life, which I've had a while back now. The reason I had that was because, both my husband and I, I've had cancer, my husband's got cancer. And we're also getting on a bit, sort of thing. So it does put things in perspective. Now, it was done, the living funeral I had was done with a lot of respect and sensitivity, but also it was really lighthearted. So it wasn't about sort of people saying wonderful things about me or anything like that. That's not what it was about. But it was an opportunity for me to say to people, you know, bring back nice memories, tell them about all the fun things we've done. And people, there was a mixed response, I must say, you know, because people have different beliefs, different religions, different ideas. But people who did come said that they were honest and said that, you know, they didn't know what to expect, a bit unusual. But they went away saying, oh, that was quite a good idea. You know, why not celebrate
while you're still here? Yeah.
While and you're still here,
are
yeah.
Are you, so are you glad you did it?
Yes, I am glad I did. And I think, you know, I believe it's a lot more common in places like America and whatnot.
Is it?
Yeah, apparently. And also, you know, I guess for people who maybe are in hospices or who
I've been diagnosed with dementia or whatever. It just, I mean, you know, why not just celebrate life now rather than afterwards?
Well, that does make sense. Yeah. Thanks for that, Rona. Appreciate that call. Let's go to Portsmouth. Hello, Lynn.
Oh, hello, Nick. First funeral I had to sort out was my husband. I've got to say, he was only 44 when he died. I sort of chose one of Guns N' Roses' songs, which maybe you can imagine caused a bit of controversy, first of all.
Yes,
with the funeral directors. But when they listened to it, it was Sweet Child of Mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is one of the, you know, nicest songs.
Yeah, it's a beautiful anthemic song, yeah.
Yeah. And also, my husband's brother, he sort of asked if he could play Tiger Feet by Mudd.
Really?
Yeah, no, come on.
He was only
16 years old.
Right.
Yeah, so it was one of his favourite songs. Right, so that was really good. With my mum's funeral, I sort of chose First Time I Ever Saw Your Face by Roberta Flack.
Oh, that is a stunning song.
Yeah, it is. My dad's, I would have liked Waterloo Sunset by The King.
Oh. Huh.
Yeah, but my mum, she'd chosen, so that was, you know, her business.
Yeah.
But with mine, I would like T-Rex, Ride the White Swan, and The King of the Mountain Cometh, and Matthew Southern Comfort, Woodstock.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Very nice. So Matthew Southern Comfort's version, not Joni Mitchell's.
Oh, no. I'll stick to the original.
Crosby, Stills and Nash. All right, well, good to talk to you, Lynn. Thanks for that. I did say that I was going to give you the top 10, and it is as follows. Time to Say Goodbye by Sarah Brightman and Andrea Bocelli. This is the top 10 that as chosen by people who have used the Co-op's funeral care service. They did various lists of top sports songs, and the top one was You'll Never Walk Alone by Jerry and the Pacemakers. They did top pop songs, and it was Simply the Best by Tina Turner was the number one, and top hymns is Abide With Me. That was the number one there. But overall, they say that these are the top 10. Time to Say Goodbye by Sarah Brightman and Andrea Bocelli. My Way, Frank Sinatra. Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Eva Cassidy. You'll Never Walk Alone by Jerry and the Pacemakers. The Best, Simply the Best by Tina Turner. Supermarket Flowers by Ed Sheeran. I admit, I don't know what that is. Wind Beneath My Wings, Bette Midler. Abide With Me is that hymn. We'll Meet Again by Vera Lynn. And Highway to Hell by AC/DC. No, I'm kidding. That's not on the list. You Raise Me Up by Westlife is the number 10 song. Thanks for all that. I appreciate your messages and your calls. I'm sorry I couldn't get to everybody. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to go talk to our US correspondent about what has been happening there. This is LBC.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
Two Labour-run councils are now considering legal action to oust asylum seekers from hotels following Epping's court ruling. But which political party do you trust the most to solve the migrant crisis?
Richard Spur on LBC.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
OK, train from London to peaceful Peterborough.
Ning Park's this way, huh?
Gorgeous. Wow. Never thought I'd be this into bird watching.
Did you see it? Lovely plumage.
Train home, brilliant day. Oh, gotta rent bikes next time to see the big lake. And more birds, obviously.
Download the Thameslink Railway app and save with advanced tickets. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
This summer, deciding between eating, drinking and chatting is over, thanks to the new Tipple Topper from Waitrose. Our mini charcuterie boards sit on top of your wine glass and come with delicious nibbles, such as Milano salami, Iberico cheese wedges, tangy pickles, olives and crunchy bruschetta bites. Perfect for mingling without juggling plates. Let your summer side out with Waitrose. Selected lines and stores subject to availability.
This is LBC with Nick Abbott. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Having trouble getting through to our US correspondent, so it does give us an opportunity to talk to Tony in Wickford, who's called in. Hello, Tony.
Thank you, second joint. Yeah, I had to plan my husband's funeral and my mum's funeral with the music and stuff, so I am so not putting that burden on my daughter, and I will be picking the music that I want, and it's not going to be miserable. It's not going to be any of the ones that have been in the top whatever.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little bit of Motown.
Oh, yeah. Anybody in mind?
I don't know, because I'm thinking about it. I'm going through it. And some dance music, because I want people standing up and dancing.
Do you think that they will?
Of course they will.
You could insist on it.
Yeah, I should put that in the reading.
Exactly.
So, now
be upstanding for Donna Summer or whoever it might be.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be Donna Summer. It's probably going to be Jocelyn Brown.
Jocelyn Brown. Okay, good choice. All right, Tony. Thanks very much for that. Okay, we're ready now. Greg Palast, author of New York Times bestseller The Best Democracy Money Can Buy and the freelance investigative reporter, joins us on the phone now. Hello, Greg.
Yes. Except I'm no longer free. I'm an enslaved writer for Raw Story. I'm a columnist and investigative reporter at my old Guardian job.
Well, wow, very good.
The old Guardian team there, actually.
Excellent. Okay. So the purge of the deep state continues, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the purging, the purge is very deep. The state isn't very deep. We just had Vin Nguyen was just fired by Tulsi Gabbard, who's, you know, uber MAGA, because he supposedly, he's head of data analysis. He's one of the top mathematicians and top AI experts in America. He is the head of data for our National Security Agency, and he was fired because he was suspected of having something to do with the investigation of Donald Trump and Russian influence 8 years ago in 2016 and 17. So they don't even know what he found or didn't find, but just the fact that he participated in an investigation for the National Security Agency, he's fired. This is our top AI man in the government. It's devastating to the work. And in addition, this just beginning of kind of the terror raid. It's like a Stalinist purge without the executions. It's career executions for many people, but we just had literally scores of top attorneys and investigators for the U.S. Department of Justice because they either arrested people who broke into the United States Congress, the insurrectionists, and just for arresting people breaking into the Congress, a couple cops died just for investigating. They've lost their jobs, even though that was their assignment, was to find people who committed these crimes in our Capitol. They've lost their jobs. Anyone who's investigated Trump, even if they found, said that there's nothing there to see, lose their jobs. And William Webster, known as Judge Webster, who is head of both the CIA and the FBI under both Republicans and Democrats, has gone public and said he's creating a system of terror within our intelligence agencies, within our Justice Department. It's a system of complete terror that is eliminating. And so people are afraid to speak out, afraid to even continue investigations. If you go after Trump or one of his buddies, even looking at them, if they break the law and you try to handcuff them, you will lose your job. That's pretty terrifying for, you know, this has never happened. And as far as I know, I don't, certainly not in my lifetime.
I mean, Tulsi Gabbard is the director of National Intelligence, and it's not just the Department of Justice, is it? Because I believe that they've announced that they are going to halve the number of people. They're going to cut the spy agency in half.
That's
they're going
right.
to fire half of the people that are who are tasked with keeping America safe.
Yes, it's anyone who had anything to do with investigating Russia and its relation to the Trump campaign, you're fired if you just worked on it. And that means, so we're not only halving the size of our national security agencies, we're trying to deal with Russia. We're going to have no Russian speakers in our agency. I mean, they're wiping it out. And in fact, they've even said they're going to stop. He actually announced we're going to stop spying on Russia. That's a brilliant thing to say to your interlocutor. We're not going to spy on you, so go right in. And they've canceled Radio Free Ukraine, Radio Free Russia. They've canceled almost all of the Radio Free Europe operation, which is, you know, the only source of real news for people in these nations under these dictatorships. So it's really, people are scared.
And it
people
goes, it goes, it goes beyond that. I heard that the state of Oklahoma is now forcing teachers who come from outside the state, from, you know, what are called woke states like California, they're going to give them a test to see whether they have loyalty to Donald Trump. These are teachers in school who will not
That's
be allowed
right.
to teach unless they can pass a test of loyalty to Donald Trump. And this is Oklahoma,
oh my God.
which is... I think it is either at the bottom or certainly near the bottom in educational attainment of all the states in America.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I just spoke to Chief Standing Bear of the Osage Tribe in Oklahoma yesterday, and they are trying to maintain their educational system on the reservation. That's not easy, but they are being – it's actually kind of a reign of terror. For example – I'm working with Leonardo DiCaprio on the follow-ups, the sequel to Killers of the Flower Moon, which is about killing the Indian tribes and killing people in these tribes in Oklahoma. Well, the book and my film are banned in Oklahoma. So I'm making a film with Leonardo DiCaprio, but if a teacher dares shows my film, and I'm talking even college and university level, they will lose their job. This is the kind of thing that's going on. It's the return of the McCarthy era with loyalty oaths and government agencies having to prove their loyalty to the great leader. It's extraordinary.
The thing that surprises me most about all of this, I mean, Trump is just, he could be the worst human being currently alive. But the American media, they seem to be trying, they're bending themselves into pretzel shapes in order not to write that any of this is sort of out of the ordinary. They're just reporting it as though this happened and that happened, and it's almost as though they're thinking, well, don't worry, because, you know, the midterms, they're coming up, and we've only got to wait until 2028, and Trump's going to be out of the White House. It's as though they haven't grasped the urgency of what is actually happening to them. This is a coup.
Well, in media, they've grasped the urgency, and unfortunately, they're grasping their wallets. They just canceled the number one talk show in America, Stephen Colbert, because he took on Trump. His show was canceled. Number one talk show in America, and they canceled it. If you really want to know what's going on in America, watch the last couple episodes of our satire animation, South Park.
South Park, it seems to be the only thing in American media that is actually addressing this with the seriousness and the sort of outrage that it deserves. A cartoon.
Yes, well, they have Jesus coming down, whispering to the people in Colorado. I can't use words that Jesus uses, at least on the show, not in the Bible. But he says, shut the F up, because we're going to get canceled. The show's going to get canceled. Jesus Christ is going to get canceled. Trump's firing everyone. So Jesus is worried that he's going to be canceled, he says, because Trump sued him, too. And then they go into heaven and arrest brown people, brown angels in heaven.
Yeah.
Everyone else in media is scared to death. CBS News fired the head of our number one, the equivalent of Newsnight, the head of 60 Minutes was
was fired. The staff is being fired. They've paid Trump personally at least $16 million personally for crazy suit. And understand, you know, in America, we have a law that a president is not allowed to sue. It's called the Sullivan Rule. He didn't care. He sued anyway. But he says, if you don't go along with this, I'm not going to approve your merger. Paramount wanted to sell itself to a company called Skydance.
Yeah.
And Trump said, no deal unless you basically cancel these shows and write me a check.
It's as though the mafia has taken over America.
Well, the mafia would just be in it for the money. This is kind of worse because, for example, in 2026, everyone's saying, well, just wait, you know, just wait another year or so, and then we'll be able to, you know, he'll leave or he'll the Republicans will lose Congress. Well, this week, Trump announced that he's going to end mail-in voting in the United States. And you have to understand that 70%, nearly three quarters of African Americans vote by mail or vote early. And so that's so if you end mail-in voting, which is used mainly by Democrats, the election is just going to be completely bent. Plus, they are now, you know, they're playing this game where they're redrawing the congressional map in Texas.
Right. And it seems like Gavin Newsom is the only one who's actually putting up a fight, and good for him. And I think he's doing an excellent job. Let's hope it's not too little too late. Good to talk to you, Greg. Thanks very much for that. That's Greg Palast, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Now, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on Global Player and the new LBC app, on which you can read and watch the latest from LBC. You can put your news categories in the order that you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts, amongst which you'll find mine. You can get it for free from your app store now. I'll be back tonight at 10. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Ian Payne. But first, Richard Spur.
Good morning. Still to come, belief amongst young adults that the use of force against a child is unacceptable has grown stronger in recent years, according to the NSPCC. And as leading child doctors join calls for a complete ban on smacking in England, I'll be asking if it can at times be justified. But first, two Labour-run councils have said that they're also considering legal action to remove migrants from hotels in their area after Epping Forest District Council won that interim High Court injunction this week to stop asylum seekers being housed in the Bell Hotel in Essex. So as support starts to grow across the political spectrum for this move, which party do you now trust the most to solve the migrant crisis once and for all? 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, thousands of students in England, Wales and Northern Ireland are to receive their GCSE results today. Nearly 100,000 in the West Midlands and Greater Manchester are taking part in a government pilot where they get their results through an app. Laura Burtonwood's head teacher at Cardinal Wiseman School in Coventry and told LBC why they're taking part.
From a school's perspective, it is a lot more straightforward. And from a pupil's perspective, it is more straightforward because those pupils that want to go on into their next step, they have everything there with the app. So they don't have to mess around with anything. They're not reliant on schools. They're not reliant on waiting for certification.
The Conservative leader is encouraging Tory-controlled councils to consider legal challenges against the use of hotels to house asylum seekers. Cammy Badenoch said Epping Forest District Council achieved a victory for local people after a court allowed it to block migrants staying at a hotel there. Sabi Dalu from Stand Up to Racisms told LBC public opinion's a reflection of political discussion.
In Epping, asylum seekers have been housed in the Bell Hotel for 5 years. Why has it just become a problem now? It's because that alleged crime that took place several weeks ago has been seized on by far-right groups and has been used to whip up racism and sow division.
Israel's military says it's taken the first steps of a planned operation to take over Gaza City. 60,000 reservists have been called up, with the country's defence minister also said to have approved plans for a new offensive. The health service has begun a personalised blood matching test for people with rare conditions who require regular blood transfusions. It means donor blood to be matched more closely to reduce the risk of severe infections. The new test uses genetics to generate detailed blood group information. And some train fares in England may increase by 5.8% next year after the RPI rate of inflation rose 4.8% last month. The government's not yet confirmed how it will determine the cap on regulated fare rises next year, but Lib Dem Transport spokesperson Paul Cooler told LBC it's likely we'll see a jump.
It looks likely that rail fares will go up by 5% next year. We need to grow the market for rail. We don't do that by increasing fares constantly.
LBC weather. Low cloud across much of Scotland and northern and eastern England today. Some sunny spells developing later on. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Richard Spur.
Good morning. Two Labour-run councils have now said that they're also considering legal action to stop the use of hotels to house migrants in their areas after Epping Council won that temporary High Court injunction. The leaders of Wirral and Tamworth councils both say they're considering their legal options in the wake of the Epping case, citing similar concerns about the impact of the hotels on their local communities. Epping, as you know, won that injunction on Tuesday to stop migrants being housed at the Bell Hotel after arguing its owners didn't have the planning permission to do so. In a statement, Paula Basnett, the Labour leader of Wirral Council, said, "We're actively considering all options available to us to ensure that any use of hotels or any other premises in Wirral is lawful and doesn't ride roughshod over planning regulations or, crucially, the wishes of our communities." She said, "If necessary, we will not hesitate to challenge such decisions in order to protect both residents and those seeking refuge." Similarly, Carol Dean, the Labour leader of Tamworth Borough Council, said she understands the strong feelings of residents about the use of a local hotel to house asylum seekers. And she pointed out that under Labour, the use of hotels has halved from 402 to 210, with the aim of stopping the use of any hotels by the end of this Parliament. Kemi Badenoch, the Tory leader, as you know, backs more council rebellions. Epping, incidentally, did have overall Tory control, although it does have a mixture of councils leading it. Other Tory councils are also being encouraged to follow Epping's lead by Kemi Badenoch. In fact, she sent a letter to all the councils the Tories control, pledging her support for them to fight migrant hotels, writing, "The Epping Hotel injunction is a victory for local people, led by a good Conservative council working hard for their community. This is the difference Conservatives in local government deliver. Real plans, real action." And so we have before us, I think, perhaps not surprisingly, the major parties proclaiming the reasons why they would get the asylum crisis right. Labour saying that they've halved the number of hotels. Badenoch, you know, backing the idea that councils should fight for the people that live there and oust these asylum seekers. And I'd like to know this morning, amongst the major political parties, which you now, given we've had this latest chapter of the Epping injunction, which party you now believe, in your bones if you like, and from what you've heard, would solve the migrant crisis if they had the chance. You may believe the current government has not had enough time. It's been going on under the Tories now for many, many years. Starmer has only been in for just over one. A lot of his supporters, those that are left, still say that they feel he's got the right idea and that in time, given time, he and his ministers will be able to solve it. 0345 6060973. Which party do you trust on the migrant crisis? Just to point out a little bit of context and a bit of recent history, back in 2020, in August, The Guardian reported that the Bell was one of around 20 hotels chosen by the Home Office to temporarily house asylum seekers. Chris Philp was at the time Immigration Minister, now, of course, the Shadow Home Secretary, when that decision was made. And when he as Shadow Home Secretary today says, Labour has lost control of our borders. You know, he became immigration minister back in 2020. At that point, only 2,400 people had crossed the Channel in small boats, and there were just 10 hotels in operation. By the time he left, there were 149 hotels in place, and 25,500 people had crossed the Channel. So it sort of shows what happened underneath the Tories. Of course, Bibi Stockholm, do you remember that barge which was moored off the coast, played with problems, disease, goodness knows what else. The Rwanda scheme was a failure. I don't think you have to have a political affiliation to say that. And yet Rishi Sunak spent seemingly all of his time for the last sort of 6 months of his time in office trying to get that right. And of course, it didn't. Virtually no planes took off. So, you know, with the government saying, look, we're making headway, spending nearly a third less on hotels to house asylum seekers between April 24 and March 25. And with, of course, what Mr. Farage and Reform UK are saying about their attitude towards immigration, and particularly the small boats and housing asylum seekers. Do you have an instinct or perhaps an informed opinion this morning about just whether this Labour Party can get the job done with the current policies they're pursuing, or if you feel Reform UK, the Tories, might in fact have now, in light of what we're seeing, and I think this, I predict this will be a domino effect of courts allowing injunctions and removing asylum seekers from hotels. Do you now have a different view about just which party you feel might be the one to crack the asylum crisis? One, of course, of the major problems that this current administration faces. And there's an interesting editorial, and I stress that it is an editorial in one of the papers today about Nigel Farage, and it's entitled Lies, Damned Lies and Nigel Farage. Nigel Farage is continuing to peddle a lie about clashes outside a hotel housing migrants in Essex. He falsely